and here we go with another edition of We Talk Wrestling with Addie and Mo. Hey, yo, I'm Addie.
Hey, yo, I'm Mo, the one of us not on steroids.
Really?
Yeah.
That's because you're fat.
That's why I should be on steroids.
That's true.
Can you take human growth hormone just for your penis?
I already have.
Oh, how'd it work out?
Now I have two.
Oh, so you perform your own double penetrations.
You're on wheat.
I'm on wheat steroids.
Yes. Wheat TH.
Oh, man. Good shit.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk, what do you call it? Wrestling.
Wrestling.
This show, we're going to talk a little bit about best of moments of the year.
We're going to do
our little history lesson thing for people who have only been watching for a few years. Let them know what to watch to be the most important. But first off, there's a news item we want to get out of the way.
Well, no, I think we can kind of go to that. But, I mean, 2012 is, for all intents and purposes, in the books.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, we had a year of wrestling.
Old man 2013 is on his way out the door, and baby 2000, wait, what'd I say?
What?
Fuck it.
I already have. The thing is, yeah, 2012, here we are. I mean, it's over. I mean,
baby 2013, old man 2012.
I see.
I'm going to drink more beer.
Ric Flair did return on Raw.
Yes.
So, but the thing is, a lot of people, we got emails and tweets about, you're going to do a year in review show. You're going to do a year in end show. And, I mean, I don't want to sound rude, and we are going to do a little bit about that, but quite frankly, everybody's doing a year in review show.
Yeah.
So we just didn't really want to do the same old, and I thought that we both did that. Maybe if we're just going to do it in a little bit different way. We're going to look back at the year that was, sort of what stood out for us. But we're not going to go through sort of every moment, every pay per view, every what chronologically. Maybe it's just a matter of things that stood out to us in the past 12 months.
Now, well, we are going to do that because that is just, like I say, just kind of informally talk about this.
Yeah.
While you're drinking your beer, before you continue, I know you started one, you don't want to open another. You got to open this other one because I thought we were grabbing Rickard's White, and it turns out this is Cardigan, which is a spiced Christmas beer thing.
Really? He's wearing a Cardigan sweater on the bottle.
Yeah.
Huh.
And it's pretty fucking
good.
Seasonal. It's pretty Christmassy, actually. So,
yeah, it smells it. Okay, I'm just going to drink that now, too.
Give that a try. What do you think?
I wish me a Merry Christmas.
All right, but let's talk a little bit about the Survivor Series buy rate here.
212,000 buys.
Yes. So what does that mean?
That's down.
Yes. So this year, you didn't do as much as the year before when you had The Rock in Madison Square Garden.
Because his Twitter followers told him to team with John Cena.
So it's a huge surprise.
Yeah,
now, this is considered down. It's considered a disappointment. How could it not be? I mean, they knew it was going to be a disappointment. Now, number one.
No, they didn't, and that's why it is a disappointment, because they had come off the Hell in the Cell with Ryback and CM Punk.
They thought they had a new
draw. They were riding the Ryback wave, and this is now.
And I told you the minute that they booked it, I said it on the show, it was because the curiosity was, are they actually going to put the belt on this guy, this green guy who nobody knows?
It was a perfect storm.
It's not so much that people are into Ryback as they're into that situation that occurred because of everything that had gone on.
Mike, the situation?
Were they actually going to ruin their...
Mike, the situation is something good?
You watched the show.
It's over now.
Oh.
Yeah, forever.
Well, but they got spinoffs.
Well, yeah, but that's just Jay Wow and Snooki.
Oh.
I think Paulie D had a show, but
yeah.
It's not the same.
Not the same.
Mike's situation.
It's like when Joey had his show after Friends.
Oh, no.
Different Joey. We haven't heard from that Joey in a while.
No.
Maybe we'll hear from him at the Royal Rumble when we're there.
I hope so.
The point being.
I hope he's in the Royal Rumble.
That would be great. The point being, though, is
what is the point?
I fucking don't know. You cut me off. We're drinking beers. What the fuck are you thinking? It's the Ryback was not a draw. The situation was a draw. People weren't sure. Were they actually going to put the belt on this guy and ruin their plans with The Rock and everything? It was all that type of shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, they thought they were going to ride away, but I knew they weren't going to do as much as they did with the Rock the year before.
It's true.
Actually, all things considered, I'm not sure if we go back 2 years ago, what Survivor Series did
It's kind of what I was wondering, actually.
Yeah, actually, I doubt this is, like, the worst Survivor Series in the last 5 years. I really do.
No, that's right. I think it's just, again, it's just they're looking at down last from last year. I mean, they had that stupid three-way with DX and John Cena.
Yeah, where all the comedy leading into it,
yeah,
and nobody bought
they
the
went
thing.
Up a little bit, I think, for Freed or
and,
Fired.
And, yeah, exactly. And then
Survivor Series has really been hit or miss, but I've been there was that
yeah, I mean,
point.
When was it Vince actually canceled, got rid of the event permanently before deciding to bring it back?
That was after.
It was after
the DX John Cena, and then
Survivor Series isn't a draw anymore. You mean when you have a comedy build for your main event and you don't actually build any Survivor Series matches? Mean
yeah.
anything?
Oh, you mean
it doesn't mean anything?
Oh, you mean Brian Gewirtz is a writer for you? Huh?
You fucking idiots.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, yeah. So that's the one sort of the news bit, I guess you want to get to, was the Survivor Series.
So yeah, anything else to say about it there?
I don't think so. I think it was about in line of what it should have been. I mean, quite frankly, is what just it really Survivor Series now is another Survivor Series TLC. You know,
well, it's also hard. Yeah, exactly.
I would go so far as to say the Money in the Bank is taking this place of the Survivor Series.
I could see that. Well, I mean, the thing is...
It's a double gimmick match that happens on once a year that the newer fan base is used to that meaning something, where we were used to the Survivor Series, you know, the teams of five strive to survive, meaning something.
But again, exactly. If Survivor Series is a gimmick match on a paper, when every single pay-per-view is gimmick-based, of course it's not going to mean a hell of a lot.
Very true.
And that's the thing that...
Well, and couple that with the fact that they don't even do the gimmick well.
Well, yeah, and exactly. There was the one. Actually, they had two, but I think they only advertised the one Survivor Series match.
They had two, right? That's right.
So, of course, how is it going to mean anything to anybody?
Yeah,
why is it called that? It doesn't mean fuck all.
Yeah.
It's shitty booking during the Survivor Series, and of course, like I say, I don't think this is the worst Survivor Series that could have been. So
no, that's
but yeah, I mean, if they expected it to, no, Ryback is not a draw yet. Ryback is still not getting the crowd reaction as some of these other guys. He's been good on TV for the ratings so far, and he's been booked tremendous. But as far as the crowd reaction, he's definitely not.
He's
there.
Getting there, though. He's on his way.
Better than he was,
yeah.
But it's not up there. It's not up there at the biggest
there.
Stars.
He's getting there.
It's bigger than Miz. It's not as good as Daniel Bryan. You know what I mean?
But you're getting there, and that's all you can ask.
Yeah.
I mean, That's
cool. I don't think it's going to get any more in this. I think he's kind of plateaued.
We'll see. Yeah,
we'll see. If they do the booking, they have booked him so well. If they book his chase for the title, which is the plan now to give him a
well,
lot of
Well, no chase. One knows the plan right now.
That's true. But well, either way, he is definitely having a chase.
In some case. Yeah, a chase of Punk, a chase of Show, a chase of whatever it is.
Whatever it is. If it's a longer chase that he is going for, that could make him a bigger star.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not because he got pinned the month before. It's because the situation
wasn't
as intriguing.
Why do you keep talking about Jersey Shore?
The month before, not the month before.
Oh, no, you said the situation. But the thing is, the thing that you always say...
The snooky of it all.
You always talk about the chase. The chase, the chase, the chase. The WWF is not known for the chase, right?
It used to be.
When?
When Austin was chasing.
Well, who was Austin chasing?
Austin had his first title match well over, I think, probably almost a year before he actually won it against the Undertaker in pay-per-view. And before that, he was chasing a shot.
He had, what are you talking about? When he beat the Undertaker?
He faced the Undertaker for the title when Undertaker
in your
was
house,
champion.
Cold day in hell.
Yeah.
I remember, yes.
Yeah.
And the Hart Foundation was at ringside. Because when did that happen? 1997. And
he doesn't win the belt until 1998.
Yes, but I don't consider the thing is with him is he was fighting with Owen and for the Intercontinental title. He was fighting with The Rock for the Intercontinental title. Then he won the Royal Rumble, and that match was then set. And that's really where he began his quote-unquote chase. When you talk about NWA, WCW was always the babyface gets, say, beaten down by, let's say Sting gets beaten down by the Horseman.
Well.
And then he chases.
Shawn Michaels had a chase to a degree, right? I mean, he wins the Royal Rumble, takes on Diesel, has to wait another year to get
the championship after he went and he fought Jeff Jarrett. Again, we go back to the Intercontinental title. Two dudes with attitudes. Then the guys in Syracuse, New York, and things like that. But
But the whole thing turned out to be a chase for
but
deer.
But for the whole year,
right,
you know what?
I'll say one thing. You're probably right that they haven't been good at a chase. They used to be better than they are now still, but not still great. And the reason why is, like, Chris Benoit had a chase, right?
No, he didn't.
Yeah, he did. He had about 15, 16. He had his first title match against Kurt Angle, and he didn't win it for another 16 months. Now, it doesn't mean he's chasing the whole time at the top of the card.
That's what I'm saying.
Because that's impossible to do with filling 52 weeks worth of television and 12 pay-per-views. You can't do it the way you used to do it.
Yeah.
You just can't. But it doesn't mean it isn't still a chase. It's a chase within the modern era. And the same thing goes for back in the old days, we talk about them having a chase.
Chase Stevens?
We talk about
Cassidy O'Reilly.
Remember when I thought they actually had a future?
The Naturals?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Shane Douglas.
Yeah. The franchise.
But the point is that used to be we had babyface champions almost exclusively for WWF for a long, long time, right?
Correct.
So, of course, you're not going to have a lot of chase.
When they were successful.
Yeah.
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 So, who's the champion now?
Yeah, but he hasn't even healed his whole run.
No, that's true. That's good. It's similar to Macho Man, right? So, but no, I mean, that's the whole thing. But I think, I mean, really, that you could talk about 2012 here and being one of the stories is that CM Punk is a WWE champion for all of 2012.
Yeah.
Unprecedented in the modern era, as you keep saying. It's true.
As of the day that we're recording this is, what, 398 days or something like that?
Something like that,
yeah. Yeah, no, it's you know, it's good. I like it. I wish that it wasn't so rare.
That's true.
That said, and he's become a successful heel. I don't think he's become a successful, I don't think he's become a successful drawing champion because they turned him into a guy who fluke wins his last little while here. So the idea of knocking off this great champion who's had it for so long because he's that fucking good, it means somebody even better beats him. It doesn't exist.
That's true, but The Rock's going to beat him anyway, so
yeah, exactly.
It doesn't, you know.
But it should have been that he was great and then just lost to The Rock.
I'm just so glad that
they just don't want The Rock being cheated or being booed, right? And they're probably fucked either way.
Yeah, I think so. So, but no, this is going to be. This was a good. That's I think that to me, we talk about the top. Say stories of 2012, and the CM Punk being champion for the whole calendar year is definitely one of them.
Yeah, it's definitely one of them.
You know,
to me, one of the stories of the year is the Daniel Bryan Yes Chance being unbelievably over, and them doing everything they could to undermine it.
Yes,
is one of the stories of the year.
No pun intended.
Because they could have really made it something. Now they've allowed him to be babyface and made it something, but he's not. But they certainly didn't capitalize on the momentum the character had.
No,
did everything they could to you know.
And then when they realized they couldn't, they kind of used it the best way that they know how.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, you think of WrestleMania and the 37 seconds, you know, and the yes signs in the front row, and that carrying over to John Cena's promo the next night on Raw where the yes chants were just overpowering.
Yes.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah.
And then him getting some main events in with CM Punk, thinking that if they put him against Punk, he won't be as over as Punk. And it was like a 50-50 sort of thing, and then...
Probably actually 70-30, Daniel Bryan in some of those cases.
And some, it was. It flip-flopped there, yeah. It was.
Yeah.
But, and then, again, they've still got the no thing, and that's what
they
decided.
Yeah, they got the no thing. People love chanting it. They react to him when he comes out. He's not a ratings draw. But I think that's because, again, they did not use what they had. They did not. They just looked at that as a hardcore WrestleMania internet crowd.
Yeah.
Instead of looking at it as what it could be, and they didn't take advantage of it. And that to me is one of the stories of the year.
That is, yeah, no, definitely.
You know, to this day, there's people that they push harder on and view more like Sheamus
and Ryback.
And Ryback, yeah, who don't have the same reaction.
Well, Sheamus, winner of the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
You know, so that was a little bit of a surprise to start the year.
It was an absolute
surprise
because we've been hearing Randy Orton.
Yeah.
Sheamus wasn't even on the... And then he had a long title run as well. He had like 7 months, right?
Well, it's funny, and that's what I was on the internet, right, is that, you know, Sheamus, you didn't hear anything about Sheamus winning the Royal Rumble.
No.
And then Sheamus won the Royal Rumble. They're like, yeah, they kind of talked about that a few months back. It was like you hear from like the Meltzers and the Kellers and stuff. Yeah,
really?
They did talk about that a couple months back. But then they kind of come, but we thought that was, so it was kind of like, oh, yeah, okay, now. But I mean, yeah, it seemed to come out of nowhere, and You know, and then he gets, I said, the 32nd. And he was a champion for quite a long time,
I think he was almost
too.
7 months now. The thing about him is, well, I think in some ways the 37 seconds, as much as it pissed people off, could have been the best thing that happened to Daniel Bryan. It in some ways made him a bigger star.
It did, a martyr almost.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Damian Sandow.
But it did the opposite to Sheamus. I think it was almost impossible for Sheamus to ever get over to the level he did because he's the guy who did that to the beloved Daniel Bryan.
Well, and again, the 37 seconds.
Plus the smarmy change in his character. John Cena.
Cena Light, exactly. I think that's what
they turned him to, not getting the character, not.
You know, he had shades of that all the time. I think of, you know, always. I think of when we had the SmackDown in Calgary, you know, a year and a half ago. And he was, you know, he saw Mark Henry.
Yeah,
he's like, my uncle Fester,
farts.
And
freshly babyfaced at the time. Yeah, they did. But that's the thing, though. They didn't know how to turn the character properly babyface and use the advantages or use what it is that people could like about Sheamus.
Yeah.
Instead, they John Cena'd him, and that's all they knew how to do. And it continues. So that's one of the other reasons he didn't get over. Looking at some other things, there's certainly the emergence of new talent this year, quite a bit. I think that's been a good thing.
The Shield, you talk about
Ryback,
Big E, Langston.
But even people
in.
Like primetime players.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about, you talk about the resurgence of new talent. Let's talk about the resurgence of the tag team division.
Actual teams, yeah. Cody Rhodes, though, or not Cody Rhodes.
Damian
Sandow.
Antonio
Cesaro.
Cesaro, yeah. I mean, Brodus Clay debuted in 2012, right? Is it at the beginning of the year? Punk is on a roll, and we were so high on him when he first came in. Yes, we were.
No.
We played his music in our song.
We loved the music.
And we thought that
never
the guy...
Never liked the act. You liked the act.
I thought the act had a shelf life, though.
Yeah.
You know, and it was... And we saw the shelf life.
Exactly.
And he still continues, and WWE has cooled off on the character. But this being said, we're talking about new acts. Who, in your mind, deserves the new sensation of the Squared Circle Award for 2012?
Ryback.
Maybe Ryback does?
It is Ryback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know how you say,
I don't see how you go anybody else.
I guess you have
the other
to
person,
say,
well, I mean, the person who kind of emerged, who was the year before not even a regular on TV, who this year became a huge, huge, majorly pushed regular, superstar even, is AJ. I mean, she was when, again, we talk about the SmackDown we saw here. I mean, she came out for an NXT match or something like that, you know?
It was an NXT.
Yeah, I mean, she was nothing. She was somebody who was occasionally on
against Maxine, I think.
Yeah,
it was.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She was somebody who was occasionally on.
And
you know,
NXT
SmackDown.
Was an internet show.
Yeah, and but she was occasionally on SmackDown until she got to be with Daniel Bryan, until she got to be his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And that again happened this year. So, I mean, the emergence of AJ has also happened.
Did that happen this year? That happened in late 11. I couldn't remember.
Well,
the
character in the.
Yeah, well, exactly. Okay,
yeah.
And
her being such a big portion of their television.
Yeah. And
she's another character for this year, and in some ways you could say nuisance face. I couldn't because I don't like her.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's another actual story. You say Ryback, and I think that's probably got to be true given their push of him. But I think in terms of the new act that has entertained me the most is Damian Sandow.
Yeah, I like Damian.
I like Damian Sandow.
Primetime players as well for me.
The primetime players were good. Of course, we saw the coming and going of AW, Abraham Washington, this year. But
so death of final nail in the coffin of managers, maybe.
It seems, although now AJ is I guess a valet.
Not really, even her
with Dolph, but she's more the focus than anything.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I mean, Paul Heyman doesn't do too much with.
Certainly, I think we've seen Ziggler, who we've known even a year ago, we were talking about how good he was. We've known how good he is. I think we've seen now, 1 year later, him to the point where I feel like he's finally established as somebody who's not going to be pushed back down the card. I think he's upper mid card now or higher for life. I feel like that's where he is right now. So, you know, that's good. That's new, too.
The thing is, you can also be that upper mid card. You know who he kind of reminds me of at this point in terms of he's established, so we can't put him in the opening match or the down below anymore.
Yeah,
I honestly consider him a lot like Jeff Jarrett in his first WWF run before he cut his hair. But when he was, you think of when he lost the Intercontinental title to Shawn Michaels. Is Jeff Jarrett to me was always an upper mid card. You couldn't put him up against. You know, you couldn't have him feud with Barry Horowitz or anything like that in the opening at that point. He reached a level, not an up level, but an up enough. And that's kind of where I see him at this point with more to go. But
I think he's I kind of see what you mean.
I think he's better than that, in a better spot than that, but that's just kind of the likening, too. Because, I wrote a column at some point comparing 2012 to 1995 in this last year, and I really draw a lot of comparisons, from that, even when you're talking Sheamus in 37 seconds, Diesel beat Bob Backlund in 8, that kind of same idea.
Yeah.
A lot of things with these pushes, and Lex Luger and Ryback, you can see a lot, but... I don't know that, getting back to AJ, you say, new sensation, it's I think that's, it's a story.
I think as far as somebody, though, who's been on TV in main event storylines, she's the person who would be the most television time, certainly, of all those people you could say in a new sensation role. I don't like her. WWE, though, loves her, and that's the thing, right?
Yeah. But she's hot.
Sort of.
It's the thing is that
she wasn't hot when we saw her here. She looks better on TV than she does live.
is true.
No,
and even in the inner gear, she doesn't really look hot, right? Which is where we saw her too.
Yeah, exactly. What else this year? Obviously, there's the return of Lesnar, which is a huge story.
Well, that is a huge story as well, as was the match with John Cena. I think that, to me, is my favorite match of the year.
I go match of the year for me goes, that's number one, and number two would be Austin Aries versus Jeff Hardy at Bound for Glory. My second best match of the year for me. But if I give my top two, and those are kind of the two that I think would stand out.
And I'd actually give number three to the AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, Falls Count Anywhere from Destination
awesome.
X. That was a great match.
Yeah.
But, I think that those are, I think, but the Lesnar thing, definitely, coming back for a year, limited dates, having that tremendous match with John. Coming out to a massive pop, kicking the hat, doing the whole thing, and then, though, announcing that at Extreme Rules they're going to have the match, and we're like, because here we are thinking SummerSlam.
They still didn't maximize them.
SummerSlam
matches. They pushed it.
Extreme
Rules was much higher than a normal B pay-per-view or a Extreme Rules year before. SummerSlam was also up with him. But if they had instead done SummerSlam John Cena versus Brock Lesnar, that would have done more, I think, than Brock Lesnar versus Triple H. If they'd done Triple H versus Brock Lesnar here at Survivor Series, you would have seen it go up. I don't think they used him his best, but he's still a huge story. He's gone from UFC.
Yeah.
UFC tried to bring him back to actually have him do both at the same time at one point.
Yeah.
That didn't work out. We've only seen him wrestle two matches. We haven't seen many appearances lately.
No, but we're coming up on that season.
Yeah, exactly. We haven't seen the full Lesnar story, but just his return.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the feeling he's going to be around for a while making this occasional appearance.
I was
going to
say, I get the feeling that his contract will roll and he'll do the same sort of thing for next year.
That's cool. He's just something, he adds something when he shows up. So, if a year from now, not this year, but the following year, it's him versus Ryback at Mania, that could mean something, right? So, I kind of like it.
Yeah.
That's absolutely a huge story.
Well, let's look at you talk about the John Cena thing, and then, of course, it transitions over to, we're talking then, then he could fight Orton here, and we could do this, and we had it all laid out with all these new guys that he can go over on route to Taker at Mania, right? Mm-hmm. He's got to beat this guy, right? Well, he beat Hunter, which...
And we don't see him.
How many matches does he have? Losing to Cena and beating Hunter, we actually thought going in the opposite result.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because, it was Hunter. So, and now, again, they're talking about the rematch or whatnot. But, we've only seen him have two matches.
Mm-hmm.
And we had thought maybe, but
he's
got...
We knew he had limited dates. We didn't know how many matches. I can't imagine it's only three matches. It still feels like it should be four. Then, again, we're at that point. But you know what? The thing about him is bringing him in also heralded in the return of somebody else who's very important.
Paul Heyman.
And this isn't a person who's booking or doing anything in that direction. But just by being in TV, he makes for better television. And we thought he would be in very limited as well with Lesnar. Instead, he's become a regular character with CM Punk.
Well,
I
had thought that maybe he would have been a little bit more of a regular character while Lesnar was gone to keep bringing up
Brock. Yeah, but not
Brock.
The level he was.
But I thought kept bringing up Brock Lesnar, he would have been maybe around once a month or something.
Yeah, exactly.
But then when the... Punk attacked Cena backstage and hopped into a limo or a car, and then the tinted window come down, and it's Paul Heyman looking out. Lincoln comes down, and he sees Paul, and Paul Heyman looks out at Punk. That was a great moment, but that was like the holy shit, I'm a Paul Heyman guy, right? So it's like, yeah, perfect, right? So
the continued erosion of the ratings
is a big
story this year.
It is a big story.
It's kind of what we've been saying for a long time. We were expecting it a year from now, and now it's happened. I'm not happy the ratings are going down, but I am happy the ratings are going down if it makes for a better product, if it gives them a kick in the ass in some way.
What I'm kind of looking at,
one
of the nice, and I think we're getting a bit of that.
I think so, because we're getting fresh faces.
And that's the thing, is that you have your short-term pain for your long-term gain, and we're seeing one of the things with...
I don't think it'll pull the ratings back up.
Well, not yet. Then something has to happen. There's got to be a combination, but you've got to be invested in the face. 3 hours Raw is a big story, but let's get to that for a sec. But you've got to be invested in the faces for what the faces are doing. Like, not babyface, but the people, the wrestlers. You've got to be, like, Antonio Cesaro is going to take a while and for you to get invested. It took me a while to get invested in Edge, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels.
It took me a while to get invested in Wade Barrett, but I really like it now.
Wade Barrett. Ryback's new. The Shield. So, they've got the people that now they've just got to put them in the situations. And it's going to be the right situation.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's Snooki, maybe it's J-Wow, but the right situation. It's going to get things going, but you got to have the pieces first.
I don't think about the right situation. It's more like the right position.
Okay. Well, the situation's been
like
in the right
Snooki.
Position, I think. But
Much like J-Wow.
Mm-hmm. Big boobs. But the thing is, what I look at now is you're starting to see, again, Hunter and
his
development.
You see that other chick, the chick on that was on, I think, like 1 year of Jersey Shore, Angelique or whatever.
Oh, yeah, Angelique.
Like 2 episodes of the second year or something like that got kicked off.
Yeah.
And she was a first. She was charging like $40,000 to show up at openings and shit like
that.
And now she's doing an autograph signing at this lady. She was even, I think, was she in TNA?
She was
in, like, this last weekend or something like that. She was doing a autograph signing at Jersey All Pro Wrestling, probably for like $500. About just fucking.
And that's not the pathetic part. The pathetic part is that Virgil had more people in line.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
exactly.
But no, it's
idiot.
It's it, yeah. This last season, I think she tried to apologize to try to maybe get back into that.
Did she?
The house not realizing.
Well,
it was the last season. The show's over now.
Yeah.
So, anyway. But
what celebrity are we likely to see this year?
It's a good question. New York.
Mm-hmm.
What's Lawrence Taylor doing?
Mm-hmm.
Time.
5 to 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I mean... how kid friendly is this? Well, you know who's a huge wrestling fan was at the or his kids are at least. He was at the Daytona 500 when John Cena thing was OC Unaminyara.
Oh yeah.
A New York Giant, right? So I'm just kind of thinking of
maybe
of
the,
that.
The problem is, and he's thinking New York, but I'm thinking more like celebrity.
Strahan.
Well, the thing is, you're probably going to have to see somebody. I think pretty much it's now fostered into every professional athlete's contract within the NFL, NBA, that type of thing, even MLB.
Yeah, but the NHL,
they can't perform this outside of.
Well, they don't have contracts in the NHL.
Yeah,
right
not right now, no. But that's the thing. So
Sidney
really
Crosby couldn't have a match. Remember the Yokozuna, the USS Intrepid, when they had all the guys, and Peter Taglianetti was one of the guys.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
Anyway, but we're talking about 1990.
He was a mid-carter in the NHL.
Yeah, no shit. He was a lower mid-carter.
Yeah.
But the thing was, celebrity, last year they didn't really,
they had The Rock, so they didn't need one.
Well, no, they did, but then they have The Rock this year, too.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's different, though.
Flo Rida.
Flowrider.
You know,
yeah.
and they had to have a singer.
They'll have people who are performing.
What about?
I wonder if you could get
but
a Flowrider
who's the biggest,
match.
The biggest celebrity,
mm-hmm.
Maria Menounos.
Yeah, that's right. But I wonder if you could have, that's right, she was there. I wonder if you could have Flowrider in a match. I think you could.
Well, who did he shove last year? Yes, who did he shove last year, right?
That'd be great.
So, and all you need to do is him, Flowrider, and, you know, to tag the Usos.
Yeah, that doesn't
against
matter.
Against 3MB, right?
Yeah. That brings up Raw 1000 happened this year.
Yes, it did. The Doctor of Style, Slick, was there.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And so there's a lot of return of people, and some went over very well, some not over not so much.
Like,
I mean, but you had your DDPs, you had your Sid, you had your
Lita,
you had...
Oh, yes. Leading up to...
Yeah.
And you know what I
Vader, obviously.
Vader. Vader was then, Sid was like the second one, I think.
Second or third.
Yeah. That was really good, because... And Bob Backlund,
mm-hmm.
is because... They brought back Difference, and we talked about that. You know, they didn't bring back Slaughter and Duggan, mm-hmm. and you know, all these IRS and all the guys.
Hitting 1,000 shows is a significant event, and they put on a good show.
Well, here we are coming up. We're about
three
weeks away. But we're 3 weeks away.
Yeah.
From the 20th anniversary.
There you go.
Right?
Another big event.
Another big event. So.
But yeah, I mean, they did go. They have gone 3 hours and really talked about it.
Fuck.
It's ruining the product.
Yeah.
Is it going to continue? That is a big story. How much damage has this year being 3 hours for this long done? I mean, it hasn't been the whole year, but it's been quite a bit of it. So the question is, how much damage has it done?
I don't know yet. I mean, it's still... It's actually going to be... It's very tough already, still, right now, to say 6 months in, or
mm-hmm.
5 months in, or whatever we are. It still is very... tough to... We know it's done damage.
Absolutely.
There's no question.
Absolutely.
There's no question. This has not helped the product get hot.
No.
The points to be made with it, again, we talked a little bit about the ratings.
Mm-hmm.
The ratings are falling. The ratings are... And we just had a 2.9, which
mm-hmm.
seems very good
yeah,
right now. You
exactly.
know, 2.7's kind of the norm.
Kind of
right?
the norm.
Okay.
And we've seen 2.5s.
And we have seen a 2.5 against good football
right.
games. We've
right.
seen 2.5s, yes. But I would say the mean, the average here, 2.7.
Probably,
okay.
yeah, right now. But still going down.
Yeah, well, it's like your mom.
Mm-hmm.
But
what?
Huh? Oh. But the thing was, I thought you knew. But the thing was, also then the financials...
Still going down, but making lots of money.
No, and
well,
that's
like the
point. The financials come out, and... The money
so
they're
not
getting
really
for the
money
third hour
for going down.
Yes,
like your mom.
The third hour, not getting.
I'm not going to get much of inheritance, you know.
I know. All those wooden nickels, wood. But that third hour not generating this, you know, basically we thought, okay, well if they're getting, let's just say $100,000 an hour, $200,000 an episode, they would get $300. No, not the case.
Yeah,
it's a minuscule amount, so. It's extra money, sure, but it's not
because
equal.
They're not. They're already there. They're already set up. They're whatever. But it is doing damage, and that brings up another new. They had another new couple new shows this year. You know, they had the Saturday Morning Slam.
Yes,
which has done well for them.
Yes, and
a half hour show
and a decent enough show. I mean, we watched it earlier
yeah,
today.
It was
a
best of.
A best of,
I mean, you know,
with Michael McGillicuddy.
Michael, yeah, it's The Miz versus
yeah.
Justin Gabriel and Michael McGillicuddy versus Rey Mysterio. The best of Saturday Morning Slam.
Yeah, just old matches from Saturday Morning Slam. Not a good.
But the main event.
It's the only time you've ever seen that.
Yeah, it was
and not a good. Honestly, not a good. Encapsulation of
what
it.
The show is. Also
yeah.
not a good video quality that we saw.
Oh,
today.
Fuck, awful, yeah.
The
and you working in that industry
were
able to point that out
yeah,
more.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah.
Very,
yeah.
But yeah. But yeah, I mean, again, another new show also, the main event on ION.
Mm-hmm.
Big hopes, big push for continued, not huge push, but solid push, but no indication people are interested in watching it to any degree. Oversaturation of the product is basically what we're getting to as a big story this year.
What the main event is...
Less pay-per-views,
if,
but oversaturation in general.
If we give an oversaturation, let's just say that... But I'll go to, like, a 99, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
But what this was... Not 97, 99. But...
Are you capable of going
the
to
main event,
97?
I know. The main event, though, is Sunday Night Heat,
mm-hmm.
when it first started.
Mm-hmm.
Big push, big deal, big thing, but too much.
Yeah.
3 hours there was too much at that time. you know, because they only had the three at that point. Mm-hmm. And now, whatever we're on, 900 hours is too much, you know, here. And, I mean, it's just, it is. It's not to say the show, they're putting matches on that are, I mean, if you're a fan, they're worth seeing. You know, you're watching the Rybacks and the Zigglers and the Hell Knows against the Road Scholars. And, I mean, these are main event matches. You know, you think back to let's think back to the Action Zone.
Mm-hmm.
The first ever main event of the Action Zone was the final ever match, Bret against Owen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, was
the Saturday Night Metal or whatever.
Shotgun Saturday Night.
It
first came out from the nightclubs, right?
They had lots of very high-profile matches at the beginning, and then...
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And then it tapered off, and yeah, then became Shotgun Saturday Night. And,
the difference is with Ion and the main event is they're very worried that if this show also fails, because they failed a lot recently on television with, you know, ECW and NXT and all this stuff, that the
superstars,
superstars, the stigma will happen. Jerry Lawler, obviously a big story, heart attack on the air, and a subsequent return.
Mm-hmm. There's three parts to that story. The first part happens at WrestleMania,
mm-hmm.
when he says that John Laurinaitis' suit would give Bruce Pritchard a heart attack.
Who had just had
a heart attack. So making fun of Bruce Pritchard's heart attack. And, then art imitating life here. There he is with a heart attack. The other part of the story is that, you know, again, we talk about glad he's healthy. Fucking shitty announcer.
Awful.
Fucking horrible. Like, get the fuck off my television.
Yeah.
I am glad you are alive. I am glad you are around. I will love meeting you at the FanFest at the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
But I cannot stand him as a commentator.
And I always thought he should have taken the time. He shouldn't push his health, and he should have taken the time to retire. But obviously that didn't happen. But no, that is, I think, certainly a significant story.
Especially when it happened live on Raw.
That's the thing.
You know, that's...
It got them a lot of press. And that is another thing, though. I mean, we haven't really seen a great deal of wrestling deaths this year.
I was thinking that, actually, because part of what I was doing, as morbid as it sounds, is I thought, like, well, we should, you know, memorialize the people that have passed away. And, you know, we had Buddy Roberts, but that was, you know, I'm trying to, like...
There was somebody else who passed away young, but he wasn't a huge star. There was somebody else, though, and I can't even recall.
Okay.
So he literally was somebody who's, like, sort of on the national spotlight for a very short time.
Bobby Jaggers? Is that what you're talking about? Because there's Jaycock Bobby Jaggers, I mean, and he was a little bit older. He was tag team with Dutch Mantel. I mean, there were some deaths in it, but no massive star that I can think of at this point.
No.
You know.
And that's certainly an improvement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a good news story, definitely. I did think about...
Randy Orton, two strikes, and seems to be floundering. I mean, that's a story, but it's not a huge one. WWE Films continuing to flounder. I mean, that's a story, but not a huge one. You know, TNA.
There's
definitely some stories over there.
I was going to say, TNA, I mean, we'll go over to the total non-stop action. And
Impact Wrestling.
Impact Wrestling. And
Vince Russo.
Gone.
Biggest story of the year. For them.
For them, yeah.
The second biggest story is perhaps since he's gone, the ratings have not improved. Does that give him any sort of vindication? I'm sure to him it does. Or is it because of other factors? I tend to think it's other factors. It is a better product, though it's not really a great product.
Can I say, though, ratings are right, not improved.
No.
Pay-per-view buy rates are up 50%.
Yep. That's a start.
And that, to me, is the story.
Mm-hmm.
That is the story. And again, 7,000 to 11,000 buys. We're not talking, you know, millionaires to billionaires here.
No.
But, I mean, that to me is getting people to pay for the product.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up in 2013, the fact that they're getting rid of two pay-per-views, also a story made in 2012 that we'll see the results of next year. Good sign, good start, good, you know, to bring those up. But that's what it is. It's the pacing.
Well, they went live.
They were. Right.
They changed that. They went an hour earlier and they went live.
June, July, and August,
mm-hmm.
TNA was the better product.
Absolutely.
The better promotion.
That's the first time we've been able to say that in...
Since Scott D'Amore was booking.
Scott D'Amore, like 2007,
yeah,
2006.
When Christian just first showed up, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So, in the Dudleys, but it, yeah, exactly. Like,
it's been years since we've been able to say that.
And
it was.
To me,
and that's the thing.
The
I mean,
story.
Russo, when Russo was there, it was just no good. Finally, they let Russo go, and Dave Lagana was in, and...
still had Matt Conway there,
Matt Conway,
you know,
Bruce Prichard.
Bruce Prichard,
some power. And what, basically what you
when
had...
When he recovered.
Yeah, exactly. But it took some time for the product to get better.
Yeah.
But then they got the momentum going, and it got quite good. And then they had this Aces and Ace storyline, which started off great and created great interest, and they fucked up. But they had that. They had a lot of storylines.
Austin Aries.
Yeah. You had a lot of things like the James Storm storyline that had an idea
missed.
And then it fucked up. And it missed. And a lot of this, they kept on saying, during the period when it was going really well, Eric Bischoff wasn't really around. And then when he came back, he and Hogan started to change storylines.
Yeah.
And then it got to shit again. So it's been a very, very schizophrenic year.
It has.
For TNA. They were
shit. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
They were shit. Then they were okay. Then they were really, really good. And then they were not so good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where we are right now. But it's been a very interesting year for TNA. I've had more interest in TNA, and I'm more interested even right now.
Because
this last year has been interesting, even though right now the product isn't good. I have more interest in TNA right now. To me, that's a story.
I think, yeah, exactly. The story is really that I give a fuck about TNA.
Yeah.
You know, and...
I'm just curious to see where it goes next.
Well, that's
it. As a product. I mean, I wish Aces and Eights could have worked out better, but there's still some positives there. And, you know, just in general, just the fact that you would watch their television, you'd look at it, and you'd say, the camera angles, the way they do the camera is different, the gut check challenge was different, they had different concepts. It didn't feel like WWE liked so much.
That's
it
right.
It feels a little
and
bit
WWE
more...
stole a little bit about that. When you think about
that's
the David Otunga, Sheamus thing, and then when they're in the cafe with Hell No and Dr. Shelby.
Yeah.
The
voiceover opening they stole.
Yeah, the voiceover.
You know, WWE is actually stealing a little from TNA. That's different.
That is.
Now, that said, it has also things like the Gut Check Challenge have played out now, and they're continuing to go with it.
Well,
and that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
You have to keep reinventing yourself. You can't get stagnant.
And that's where they were good, is that they had that Gut Check, they had Open Fight Night,
mm-hmm.
and they had the championship or whatever. And the original thing was that it was going to be 1 week of each, and you always had something
fresh.
And for a week, and to do. And then they kind of mold them together and merge them,
and
they kind of puppy that lost their way.
TV title was defended every single week on TV.
And let's not downplay the importance, especially for them in the summer now, of the Bound for Glory series.
Yes.
Every match that was on Impact in, like, June, July, August
mm-hmm.
had a meaning.
Mm-hmm.
They were all pretty much, you know, if they weren't... feud matches, they were Bound for Glory. Every match had a meaning. So it wasn't just Joe against Magnus.
This year they took steps they can learn from.
Yeah.
You know, after finally getting rid of Fuckface, Russo.
Yes.
They took some steps they can learn from. But again, like I say, the ratings aren't up. But you went an hour earlier. You went on Thursdays an hour earlier, which is the worst time slot.
Now
that
football is over. Football actually was over last.
Yeah.
There wasn't one on this past Thursday. They stayed the same. But
so they're in a tape period. When they get live again...
Kevin Kaye, the director of Spike Television, that's what he has said. He said, well, football is over. We think we're at a point with our product that the ratings are going to increase.
I don't like an hour earlier. I don't even like Thursday nights for them. I do like live. It gave a fresh look to the program. There's an enthusiasm in the performers for a live show.
That's what it
not
is.
There.
Yeah,
and that's definitely true. Makes it they think they're in a major product. There's still times where it doesn't look like a major product.
In the crowd,
in the crowd
that impacts someone,
you know,
right? I mean, that's
and that's the other thing though. I mean, AJ Lee, Miss AJ, is my most go away heat performer for the year. I just every time she's on TV, I just want to turn the channel. Hulk Hogan's close. His daughter, Brooke, is even more so, and she's in a lot of stuff. So every time you do the Gut Check Challenge and it's Hulk Hogan backstage, and he's burying the guys unintentionally because he has to be so Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. Well,
that's not good. But when it's Brooke Hogan doing it because she just can't act, it's even worse. And
nepotism
is still there, and that's hurting the product.
I call that my fuck you of the year.
Yeah.
And I have the three. I have three. You had your three.
Yeah.
AJ, Brooke and Hulk. Hulk. My fuck you of the years starts with AJ, number one. Brooke is number two.
Yeah.
Every single person that has ever attended the Impact Zone is number three.
Well, they're good on Thursdays, but on Sunday nights they're awful on pay-per-view.
You know, they're just, it's I don't know what it is.
I think what it is that Thursdays, it's local people.
I'm sorry, we talked
about
Sundays.
Sundays.
I think it's more the technology.
It's probably part of it.
I think it's Spike TV isn't there to amp up and they're using locals. I think that's what it is. I really do.
That's probably a lot
but,
of it.
Because you're going to get the same return crowd there.
Well, no, I think on Sundays when it's more tourists in the park.
I think the hardcores will come for pay-per-view.
Apparently they have to line up like 5 hours ahead of time to get in. So it's free. And on Sunday, you know.
It's all free, though.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean.
Well, except for when you go to the Alamo Dome. But, yeah, I mean,
then
it's been an interesting
$15.
Year. Yeah, that's right. But it's been an interesting year for them. Still some things that we need to see. You know, I mean, slight baby steps. I think they're very slight, but they're baby steps. And that's the first, that's the first time they haven't taken a step backwards in years.
It's true. And we would be remiss if we did not mention Claire Lynch in 2012. Claire Lynch angle. We'd only put other people, but on Live Audio Wrestling, they had AJ Styles on, and he said, so they asked about the Claire Lynch thing, and he said, some people like it, somebody here. Other companies have tried to copy it, so I guess that tells everything you need to know.
That's true. Claire Lynch was not a good performer. It is a hell of a storyline that they went on for a long time.
You know what?
I can watch AJ and Daniels wrestle each other
a billion
times.
That's the thing, is you got that payoff there. And, I mean, the thing was what we found out, and we found out two things in 2012 about that. And so we found out that Christopher Daniels and Kazarian, Christopher Daniels especially, can turn chicken shit into chicken salad.
Yeah.
The other thing we learned is that Claire Lynch's real name is Julia Riley.
Well, but, I mean, it does come down to my – I mean, another one of my – a few that I really enjoyed this year
was –
That was
Julia Riley.
Yeah. My other – what was her name?
Julia Riley.
Oh, okay.
Ooh. Julia Riley.
The other thing that I really enjoyed this year was Bubba. Bully Ray was very good this year. His feud with Joseph Hart.
Yeah.
When I look at my most entertaining characters, my favorite – who entertained me the most this year? Christopher Daniels is number one.
Yeah.
And Kazarian, because he was with Daniels, was just a
good
act.
We'll call
bad
influence. Bad influence.
That
tanking,
is an excellent act. But my most entertaining performer this year for me, personally entertained me the most, is Daniels. Number two is Joseph Park, Abyss.
Mm-hmm.
I was very entertained by him most of the year. He was so good at his fucking role. Really good at it. And Daniel Bryan's probably number three for me. But, you know, again, we're talking about things that...
We're talking about
matches. We're talking about performers. Bully Ray might be the best mic performer this year.
This was Bully Ray's breakout year.
Yeah. Again, when we're talking about best of the years, we're talking about things in TNA.
Austin Aries.
Often being ahead of... Yeah, Austin Aries is another, you know...
Yeah.
Another one of my, like, wrestler of the year types. And there is the reemergence and the retrust of Jeff Hardy. Now, will he stay with them? We don't know. But that's another story, though.
Yeah.
Is that he has been given back that chance. He has worked his way back up, because that guy was in the Abyss. And from all, you know, reports, he's doing well.
Well, you know why they trust him now?
What?
It's because they can hear his thoughts.
That's a bad gimmick.
Oh,
that's what they say.
They
still stuff
God,
to work on.
Yes.
They're doing, in these live shows.
That is the worst of the year. That is
the
my number one vote of the worst
thing. Well, remember when we heard it, we were watching. What the fuck did we just watch? And then that was the title of the show that week. What did we just watch?
Because
it's really the worst
that was
thing.
The same show that after they,
that's
that
right,
was the same
cut.
Show that they, that Mr. Anderson and Austin Aries, they finished their brawl and they went, cut.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. But no, I mean, you look at some of the emerging, they've talked about Austin Aries doing great. He had that one, I mean, we haven't seen him in a while, that when they did that, you know, Dakota Darso. Remember when he picked the X Division thing? Dakota Darso and Kenny King and... Sanjay Dutt was back, so I mean, all that. Zema Ion again, had a good year. I mean, he was, a guy from the previous years Destination X that was given, you know, a shot. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you had some guys that come up, but it was, yeah, TNA kind of peaked there, and then, I don't know, they're okay.
But here's the thing is, I feel like they absolutely peaked. And they became really bad for a little while, and now they're back to being, yeah, just kind of, you know, average, as your dog, you know,
yeah,
flips his ears about, ears, like, but, fuck motherfucker, but,
like a fucking motherfucker. But the
thing is that I don't feel like it's that much or that hard to get it back to being a good product.
Well, that's the
thing.
It
feels much closer than it once was.
Yes.
So.
Well, no, the nothing really, it's just kind of there, but nothing's like shitty, you know? So it's going to be a situation where if they can get the right sort of stuff on track and then go that way. I mean, the sad part is we hear about this, you know, 1-3-13, you know, with is going to be Sting.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, then I don't mind Sting. It's you don't need all that fucking hype for Sting. You can just fucking say that Sting's coming back, and people will be like, holy shit, wow, Sting. And they'll watch, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and you got the aces. We talked about aces and eights, and who should lead aces and eights, and who should be in aces and eights. And we come up with all these wonderful guys that...
E.H. Smith, Chris Masters, and...
MVP, Trevor
Murdoch, and then you got Eric
and Luke Gallows. We said Luke Gallows, and Luke Gallows
and Mike Knox, and they're there.
Yeah,
but then Garrett Bischoff,
Wes Briscoe, and now we're talking. You know, and we thought who's gonna and Devon, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's just, and who's gonna lead it? And now it's like, who's gonna lead those guys?
Yeah,
you know, like even if it's Eric Bischoff,
they kind of fucked it up so.
Because his son is in it. It's not going to mean anything. Yeah, it went on too long. Like it started too early. It was a great story,
yeah.
But then somewhere around the arm breaker against Austin Aries at the September pay per view,
yeah.
It stalled.
It did.
Yeah.
And I think they made a mistake turning Austin Aries heel again. But he's a good heel. But he's just good at everything he does.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's like CM Punk. He's just good at everything he does,
So, ROH this year, the big story really is probably, number one, Jim Cornette leaving. Number two, the fact that the company's actually a little worse off than the year before as far as momentum.
And number three,
the big reason why, and here's the big one, is all the fuck-ups on their pay-per-views.
I think their iPay-per-view fuck-ups is their big story of
it
the
is,
year.
Yeah.
I think a sub-story, as you said, is... Number two is Jim Cornette leaving, and does anybody give a fuck?
Well,
like, does it matter?
Right. No, it doesn't matter.
And it doesn't.
And ROH just says, and that's it. The ROH, you know, they had multiple fuck-ups when they were trying to do these internet pay-per-views. They haven't built any momentum, and there's not a feeling that they're going to get better or that you care if they don't. They just kind of exist right now for the few people that
I read
that are
this.
Their fans.
I think on F4W and it's true is that ROH is as big as a number three company is going to be.
I
given,
agree with that. I
given the local climate, I mean, if wrestling was more popular, they would be bigger. If wrestling was less popular, they'd be bigger. I don't think they're like in the back seat being driven around. Like they're Miss Daisy.
No.
And WWE is Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
And they go wherever WWE kind of takes them. And that's what it is that there are
there is a lot of that, absolutely. You're as popular as the leader. You know, or momentum is driven by the leader. But that said, I do think there could be, because there was a point where there were certainly, people cared about them a lot more than they do right now.
Oh, hell yeah.
And it's just, Even last year, we
watched a couple of
IC. They still can give you some really good matches. They had a five-star match this year.
I tried to watch their match.
Davey Richards, I can't remember who it was, but I remember at the March pay-per-view, there was a five-star match in the Wrestling Observer Davey Richards had in one of their iPay-per-views. I mean,
That was against Michael Elgin? And David Richards, that was WrestleMania weekend, was it not?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it was.
And it was a five-star match.
Yeah.
You know, they can still give you that, but there used to be a feeling like you were going to get great wrestling every time, and innovative guys and young guys, and there was a chance this company was going somewhere, and that's just, it's just kind of sap. This is a company that exists, and you hope they don't go out of business, but if they do, you won't be surprised and probably won't care that much, and that's a shame. And a lot of that, like I say, stems from the fact that you can't build momentum. When you one fuck up is acceptable, two fuck ups is bad.
There
didn't they have three fuck ups on pay per view?
Yeah, they did. I remember I bought the one, the first one.
And two back-to-back, I believe.
Yeah, because it was, I want to say it was Border Wars that I ordered. That was their first fuck-up. I'm not even sure. But it, I bought, and then I got the next one for free. I think it was like a Saturday night or something. That was just, I was home, and I was like, oh, fuck, I'll watch it. And then it fucked up. Mm-hmm. And then
they offered you next.
I got
free.
The next one free,
and it fucked up.
And it fucked up. And then I was like, "Okay, I'll be done. Thank you." Yeah. And I haven't even, I haven't gone back. No. I mean, that's it. Everything I saw was great.
Okay, I know you're gonna keep drinking beer. Do you want me to grab you some more? I'm gonna get myself some Pepsi because I have to drive home.
You do? Yes. I'll take 17 more beers.
Okay, I'm gonna grab you some more. Anything else about ROH or anything else this year you want to talk about? I know you watched the one Japanese pay per view, but you haven't really watched anything else. I don't know if there's anything else to say. Any other things you want to highlight for Performer of the Year, for Match? We already talked Match of the Year. Anything the worst of that you want to talk about, maybe?
I always like to talk about the worst of. I mean, the worst of, they're the funny things. I think, I mean, outside of we talked about, I mean, you know, we looked at Julia Riley and that. And again, it was, I think to me with TNA, it's the, I don't want to say even young guys, but to stick, because it will stick with, go back to TNA, I guess we were on ROH, but to stick back to TNA, I think the real highlights, when you look at it, was the best of times and the worst of times, and the real, most of the real highlights were, you know, when we talked about AJ and Christopher Daniels, a homegrown guy, Austin Aries, who, I mean, you know, is basically a homegrown guy because he's not a WWF guy. And then when you started to put in the Angles and the Jeff Hardys and the Hulk Hogan's and such, it's like, I consider Bully Ray, you know, a homegrown guy because, you know, Bubba Ray, the Bully Ray character is homegrown. And Joseph Park, I mean, that was a highlight of the year for them. And that's around that Destination X. I guess it would have been, trying to think here, July, I guess. Slammiversary was in June, and we should mention with Slammiversary, actually, was Christian Cage, the first time a WWF contracted performer.
Yeah, very strange. And 10-year anniversary of TNA this year.
Yes.
But, you know, you talk about the homegrown guys. And the
Where's my
guys.
Beer?
Oh, fuck, yes. You still got one spare.
That's true.
I'll get you some more in a second. But, I mean, you were talking for so damn long, I thought you were going to die there. I was worried about you.
No.
Came back, instead of bringing your beer, I came back for your health.
If there's anything I can do, it's talk. If there's anything you better to talk, it's drink beer.
Well, you are talking wrestling.
That's
but,
true.
We're talking about the emergence of their homegrown guys. Then right now, here we are, and we're talking about how they're not in a good place right now as far as the product lately. Okay, world champion Jeff Hardy, WWE guy.
Yeah.
TV title?
D-Von.
WWE guy. Tag team title? Mexicans.
Oh, the Mexicans.
Hernandez and the WWE guy.
Yeah, yeah, half a guy. Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
X-Division champion, Rob
RVD.
Van Dam, WWE
guy. And that, to me, really sums up a lot of the problems.
You could say he's an ECW guy, but fuck it, he's a WWE.
No, he's a WWE guy.
For all intents and purposes, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of what I think, when we think about how right now they're not gaining momentum, that's it. They've gone back to, and same thing, they're doing the lockdown pay-per-view, and they're advertising it. They advertised all WWE guys and AJ Styles, as being there. And that's a mistake. We've been saying this for a long time, and it continues to be a mistake. I'm going to grab your beers, fucking.
All right. I think that's kind of what I was getting at. There is that, you know, it's with those guys that we're entertained by. It is the homegrown guys rather. I mean, Kenny King just coming up on the booth. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. When you look at. The Zima Ions and Sanjay Dutts when they were having those X Division matches and Dakota Darso and that kind of thing. At least, I mean, at least at that point they were, new and a little green, but I hadn't seen them for years and years and years. And that's kind of what I'm looking for is the new guys. Same way in the WWF, we talk about Damian Sandows, Tonio Cesaros and stuff and what you can see. And that's...
Let's talk a little bit about that Kenny King storyline with ROH, actually. I think that was kind of interesting. He was a guy who was their tag team champion and was given an opportunity to go over to TNA and apparently wasn't in a contract.
Yeah.
And wasn't offered a contract by Tanya either. Eventually he was. But they essentially stole somebody's champion. And we hadn't seen something like that for quite a while.
No, and that's it. And again, the Destination X pay-per-view come up. And then the funny thing, I almost think that the funniest part about that was almost the kind of the non-story that it became.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it was a story when it happened. And
we thought something was going to come out of it.
Yeah, and nothing did. It was just,
no.
Well, but he didn't have any, didn't have him under contract. So it's like, sorry, ROH, he didn't have him under contract. I mean, it happened to ECW when they took, you know, Malenko and Guerrero in one swoop,
mm-hmm.
right? So, well,
what about the litigation between WWF and TNA?
Yeah, that was an interesting
WWE
one.
WWE and TNA.
We just saw Ric Flair on the Slammies,
mm-hmm.
and it was like, and he was, it was funny.
Yeah, for people who may not be familiar, how did it start? Essentially, somebody...
Well, a guy, and I don't even remember his name, but this guy used to work for TNA, and then he went over to work for WWE,
mm-hmm.
and... He
was in the office with TNA and then the office with WWE.
Yeah, and he gave John Laurinaitis this disc and said, I've got this disc from TNA that has, like, all this information about, like, when their contracts are up and shit. And Laurinaitis immediately went and called up whoever, Terry Taylor or whatever, Bruce Pritchard, and said, you know, this guy just handed it, we fired him. He did.
Yeah.
We just fired this guy and he just gave us this disc and, you know, we've destroyed it and... You know, just wanted to let you know that, like, this happened. Just, it's ethics and business. And
I don't think it was Terry Taylor. I think he was gone by then.
Okay, well, Bruce, whoever he talked to. But, I mean, that's the deal. And then this lawsuit happened.
Because mm-hmm. isn't Terry Taylor actually back with WWE now in some fashion?
Is he?
I thought he was.
I think he's going to be.
Okay.
I don't know that he is. They were talking about him for when they were talking about moving. Remember there was that non-story where, when, talking about non-stories, but NXT was going to move to, yeah, Developmental was going to move to Connecticut, and Terry
mm-hmm.
Taylor was going to be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Change Developmental high. We have seen some of the influences with Hunter this year, certainly the
Let's finish
karma.
The story. Let's finish the lawsuit story here, and then we'll
okay.
talk about that. But the lawsuit story is basically that TNA went and sued them for saying they named Ric Flair in the suit, even though Ric Flair was...
Matt Morgan, I think, was the other one whose name
his
was.
But Ric Flair's contract had already ended with TNA
mm-hmm.
prior to all of this happening,
mm-hmm.
so it wouldn't even have mattered. But, yeah, Matt Morgan, there were a couple...
They essentially said, you looked at the disc, we believe you looked at the disc regardless.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Prove it. Now it's just this big clusterfuck of a lawsuit. It's going to go nowhere. So
yeah, and it's going to be... We haven't seen a lot of litigation between TNA and WWE historically. Not like we saw WCW and WWE...
Oh, that was just constant.
Constant, back and forth. And is this the beginning of that? Are we going to start seeing this
a lot?
But
the thing is we talk about the constant lawsuit with WWE and WWF and WCW. That stopped nothing.
No.
Rick Rude showed up on most shows.
Yeah.
You know, guys went back, forth, did that, this, there. So, I mean, as much as they're talking about, WWE didn't really want Ric Flair. Vince McMahon really didn't want Ric Flair at that point.
No.
That's why Ric Flair wasn't there.
Yeah.
Ric Flair's back now. He doesn't sign a contract, but he's going to be back. It's because WWE, Vince McMahon...
Yeah, he might by the time
WWE, Vince McMahon wants him back. That's why he's back.
Yeah.
Nobody really gives a shit about this lawsuit in terms of the office and Alex Shelley was another guy there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they were talking about and such. But, I mean, it'll all happen. If they want to, they'll get you, and it won't even matter because they have way more fucking money than TNA, and they can, with McDivitt, ride out this stuff a lot longer than they can. So,
any other worst, who's the worst character, worst wrestler, worst...
I thought we were going to talk about Developmental now.
Oh, okay. Developmental that didn't happen. They were going to move it, and they didn't.
No.
We've seen subtle things about Hunter and what he did with NXT and the vignettes and, you know, I mean, obviously Karma being the first one that was so successful, now she's gone, but, you know.
Yeah, Sin Cara's blowing up in his face too, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Now he's getting the Shield and he's getting Big E Langston.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is it's basically triple, and Damian Sandow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Coming up big success, you know, out of that. And basically what this is Hunter's sort of edict, I guess. No, no, sorry. We heard the edict at first was that they have to show up on TV with vignettes.
Yes.
Right? What it is basically that they have to show up, if they don't have vignettes, I guess, but they have to be used.
They have to show up with impact.
With impact, yeah. And in their wrestling.
Yeah.
But the thing is, and we've seen that in all those cases.
Yeah.
you know, vignettes. We've seen Shield. We've seen Big E now coming in, and so prominent roles for the guys, right? So that I would can you know think that would just continue, right?
And while Sin Cara is blowing up in his face, I like the Sin Cara and Rey team. It's just too bad, you know. I mean, different issues may not keep.
Yeah, I was going to say Fate is kind of dealing that one a bad hand right now.
Yeah, worst of characters, matches, anything like that. I mean, it's the same thing. You could say Cal Lee every year, right, is the worst wrestler, right? I mean, it's but kind of people that were putting a chance to succeed who may have failed. Can you think of anybody there?
Well, I mean, I just we've already talked a little bit, but I'll just say quickly because we've already the worst of is AJ.
Yeah.
The worst of 2012 to me is AJ.
Yeah, absolutely. Like
and that's just the worst of everything is AJ. But to talk about say the
I mean Aces and Eights the way it's ended is the worst of, right?
It's in the category of the worst of, sure, but I mean but AJ is the worst of. They like
least
the top.
Yeah, I mean
top of the pyramid.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's she's the king of the castle, and we're the dirty rascals.
Yeah.
But
worst match?
That's what I'm trying to. I mean, I'm trying to think of that in terms of what's the worst, like kind of big match that I saw.
Yeah.
And you know, again, 2012, like just some good.
I'll just pick any match between Cena and Big Show. Can I just say that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I'm trying to think of, you know, that's probably true. And again, I would actually consider that a positive.
Probably.
No, but if that's the worst.
Yeah.
You know, then that's a pretty decent year for the in-ring.
Yeah, no, I think the in-ring has been pretty solid all year.
Yeah, for all the companies, really.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not really thinking of something that just shit the bed that comes to mind.
No, I'm trying to think of, like, the worst, you know, like, kind of angles or things. I mean, one thing I can't stand is Vince McMahon coming out and whispering in Vicky's ear for her to, like, make matches or do things.
Well, they're good performers at it, but no, I don't, it's not entertaining overly. I mean,
I don't even think they're good performers at it. I don't like the whole over-the-top aspect of it.
Yeah, I suppose. And obviously the Miz. Miz is probably the worst character of the year.
Well, Miz is the worst babyface of the year.
Yeah, certainly.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I just, yeah, fuck. Worst newcomer, or so to speak, or we're giving, is Tenzai.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yes, Tenzai.
You know, Tenzai, especially when all you hear about in the sheets is how Matt Bloom, the giant Bernard, how great he is in Japan, and how, with this great worker he's become, and he thought, okay, this is a guy that left the WWF and is you know, they back then they were telling all the guys what they were releasing in the early 2000s, go to Japan, learn to be a worker, blah, 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 blah. And he's done that. Mm-hmm. That's all you hear. He's done that. He's going to come back, and he's going to, you know, really help out here. There's a chance to be something. And then it's like, fuck.
But you know what? I do believe it's like 60% them, 40% him.
Oh, like, yeah.
I really do.
I don't really blame him.
I mean,
so
that's
much.
That. I mean, he's still 40% him.
Sure.
He's definitely, you know, let down his portion. But I feel like a lot of that is them. I mean, the gimmick.
I honestly don't know if he's really let down himself so much other than, again, you're going back to WWF, so you got to do that WWF style again.
Yeah.
And you don't do that in Japan. So it's a different. I mean, he's Albert with some face paint.
Yeah, he's Albert with some face paint and a really shitty gimmick and just, like I say, shitty gimmick, shitty outfit, shitty look, just everything was...
Everything was shitty. It was just shitty. And, and that was... That's kind of the worst. I mean, Brodus Clay is up there for a disappointment of the year, I think.
For sure.
You know?
For sure.
Chris Jericho's return.
Big disappointment.
Yeah.
For sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, coming out and doing the whole, I don't say anything for whatever it was, 3 weeks or whatever, and then finally he... Big thing after not talking was, I'm going to be in the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
And he was in the Royal Rumble, and he got tossed out of the Royal Rumble, and it meant really nothing.
No.
And then...
And his matches with Punk were nothing special.
Well, and then...
Not horrible, just nothing special.
The match that started, remember the promo?
Kickoff was so good.
You say you're the best in the world at what you do, and I'm the best in the world.
And then they, of course, entertained it
off. And then it become your dad was a drunk, and your sister's on crack, and whatever. What? And it was like, fuck.
Yeah,
it's so
it definitely.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I pretty much think we covered pretty much everything for 2012. You got anything else left?
I can't think of anything, no.
All right, well, let's go then. We're 1 hour and 10 minutes already. Let's get to the main event.
Ding, ding, ding.
Because we talked about this a couple weeks ago, and I wasn't ready.
Really?
Because what I want to do here is create a situation where...
I was ready.
If, I know, you always are.
Yeah, that's your mom.
Sometimes prematurely.
Yeah.
That's my mom.
Hey, I get mine.
What I want to do is, if you've only been watching, this is based on a direct message I got on Twitter. Somebody, you know, he's been watching for 3 years, and his buddy's been watching for 5. And they listen to the show, they like it, but we talk about some older stuff, and they were asking what stuff should they watch. So I wanted to kind of create, like, if we were to teach a course, say, a 1 month course that we were going to do at a school where we tell people what they have to follow, what they'd have to...
Me on Twitter.
Yeah. And what they'd have to,
Talk Wrestling.
This would be the curriculum. Go and watch these matches, events,
yes,
moments, and it will give you a snapshot.
There will be a test.
Not everything. We're going to cover 25 years. We're going from 1983 to 2008, and saying these, can't cover everything, but we're going to say these things kind of give you an idea of what was happening in different eras, and kind of give you a baseline of wrestling knowledge. So that's what we're trying to do. We've each created a list of 10 things.
We're going
to
do a curriculum.
Yes.
The final exam? Going to be called an Andrew Martin.
There you go. Or a Punisher.
No. Hell no.
No?
Or a jacked up steroid freak.
He's dead now.
Yeah. Kelly fucked him.
Yeah. Well, Kelly fucked everybody.
Oh, yeah.
That was another big story. I don't think so, but we made lots of jokes about Kelly.
Oh, that was the big story, yes.
That was a big story this year. That we make jokes about Kelly being such a whore because she tends to get around.
How about
maybe the biggest story of the year?
Well, I think the big story too is with a lot of those divas leaving.
Yeah,
it's a story.
Actually, a lot of divas, Kelly, and a lot of other.
Beth Phoenix, the Bella twins. Karma. All of them.
Karma.
I mean.
Oh, who was the other one who left because she wasn't getting the push from? Was it
Maxine? Yeah,
it was Maxine. Yeah. So, I mean, the divas are the worst they've ever been. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're saying something.
Moments.
Yeah. So anyways, this is it. So we have 10 each. And 3 spares.
I think it's spelled moment wrong on here.
I wouldn't be surprised. And that was before you were drinking.
Yeah, I know.
No, good chance, good luck spelling it right now.
L. W. O.
So, again, Latino World Order.
Yep.
Yeah. So, again.
Arriba, 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 arriba.
We have 3 spares. So, if you steal one of mine, I'm going to slot yours in. We don't know what the other guy is doing. And then afterwards, we do have our spare.
No, you kept wanting to see mine. I wouldn't let you.
Yeah, that was it. and afterwards, if we have our spares, we will tell you what they are, or we will tell you what it is that the other guy did have twice at the end. But we won't do it during it.
Your
at
mom.
The end, we'll tell what the other guy may have stole from us. But
My
very first event happens in 1985. How about yours?
Mine happens in 1984.
All right, so you open up then.
Okay. 1984, first moment,
mm-hmm.
Hulk Hogan beats the Iron Sheik.
Okay.
Hulkamania is here.
Okay.
During the monsoons thing. I mean, that just set it off, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly significant in that it's Hulk Hogan getting the title after Sheik's had it for, a month or whatever. I don't know.
The greatest wrestling attraction, the most famous wrestler of all time,
mm-hmm.
First title reign is a significant moment.
It's a significant moment. It's not a significant match, though. But it is a significant moment. And even in the moment, he was over, but he wasn't the Hulk Hogan we know of. Though it was after Rocky III.
It was, yeah.
I can't argue it. I'm not going to argue it.
No. Well, you can't, because you sound like a fool.
No, you're 1985,
you said now?
Yeah, I 1985. You got anything in 85?
No.
Roddy Piper, Cyndi Lauper, Lou Albano.
Dick Clark's there.
Yeah, that's the birth of rock and wrestling.
With the gold record smashed over Lou Albano.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Roddy Piper, I mean, while we talk about Hulk Hogan was the biggest star, Hulk Hogan's on Saturday Night Live. He's was in Rocky. He's in the media. He's their star.
He's the face of the company.
Sure. But the guy to the wrestling fans who's the biggest, most important character, who's driving everything, is Roddy Piper.
Yeah, he's the straw that stirs the drink, for sure.
He absolutely is. And this was a great Piper moment.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd been great for a long time. You had a lot of the moments. The Jimmy Snuka, you know, the Tahiti, or what is it, Haiti Kid, where he's
the
shaving
Haiti
him.
Kid, yeah.
And the coconut thing. And
one coconut.
And later on, you would have the Mr. T stuff. All
well,
of this
the best
stuff
was, the coming out of that, was like 2 weeks later when you had the Mr. T, and he's like, say, Lapa, she's a friend of mine. We go for lunch. And he's like, oh, you go for lunch, do you? You know, it's
exactly.
So great.
It's so great. And that's it. I mean, Hulk Hogan is the face of the company, and he's out there in the media, and he's, but Roddy Piper is the guy who's creating all the sales. He's creating all the heat, and he's creating all the moments.
Yeah.
So he's the guy I open up with. I don't have another moment until 1988.
Me too.
Okay. Mine's kind of early 1988.
Mine too.
Okay. What's yours?
Two Earls. Two Hebners.
Mm.
1988.
Mine's actually before that.
In February 5th.
Mine's actually before that.
Really? You're talking about the first Royal Rumble?
No.
Oh, okay.
Saturday Night's Main Event. Honky Tonk Man versus Randy Savage.
Ah, okay. Yes,
that's Honky Tonk Man was saying that he's the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time.
Of all time.
And Randy Savage had issue with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so Randy Savage basically cuts a promo on him. They're cutting promos back and forth. Savage goes in backstage, and the camera follows him, and he assaults Jimmy Hart, saying, get Honky Tonk Man out there. And they have these back and forth kind of things, leading to finally having a match at Saturday Night's Main Event. They have a really good match. At the match, it looks like Savage is about to win. He hits the elbow. Out comes the Hart Foundation. It's 3-on-1.
Yeah.
They hold him. He gets hit with the guitar.
Yes.
Smashed with the guitar. They go to do more damage.
And the best part is the bump that Savage took just completely collapses.
He completely collapses.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan, or Elizabeth has run to the back now, returns, and the 3-on-1 attack, and it's Hulk Hogan, and Savage gets up, and they clear the ring together, and you have the handshake. They bump backs to each other, and they have the handshake.
They turn around.
We often talk about how it was a year-long storyline, Savage and Hogan.
Yeah.
WrestleMania 4 to 5. Really, if you look at it, it's much longer than that. It's closer
to... It's about a 14-15 month deal, yeah.
Yeah, even I think maybe even longer than that. Like, yeah, this is it's quite a while. And, of course, at this point, there's not the idea they're going to put the belt on Savage. At this point, they're still thinking, you know, after the two Earls, that it's going to be Ted DiBiase.
That's right.
But...
And Savage is, well, I think maybe,
they were still thinking Ted DiBiase at this point, but the idea that Hogan and him would be friends and that he would turn on Hogan for jealousy with Elizabeth was already in place. And this is the start of all this. And this is just great. The match is great. The heat is great. Honky Tonk Man is great. There's a moment where Honky Tonk shoves down Elizabeth.
Yes.
The innocent, precious flower, Elizabeth. Shoved down hard.
The snap
of her, or the, you know.
The little strap on her dress pops. And
he goes over and shakes her hips. Yeah. And it's like maybe the best heel moment I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, so that to me is, I think, a significant moment. I think everybody should watch that and kind of get an idea of what made wrestling great
and
then.
And the promo
after. Different heat. Different
heat than
you
get
now.
This is the first time that they
shook
hands.
Different performance, different styles, and different everything.
And then the promo with Mean Gene after that happened. To end Saturday night's main event was the birth when they called the mega powers.
That's
and
right.
Then they did the handshake again. And that was tremendous.
Yeah. So that Saturday night main event, and that Hulk and Talk.
Yeah,
Man
January of 1988.
Yeah.
Right? And then we fast forward a month later to the main event.
Mm-hmm.
Hulk Hogan against Andre the Giant.
Mm-hmm.
The main event on NBC Friday night prime time, you have Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant rematch of WrestleMania 3 on this, and just, you know, the buzz around that was like, fuck yeah,
mm-hmm.
to see this, and it's, you know, everybody gets it, huge, true, like a 15 rating or something,
yeah, something
you know,
insane.
Just huge.
Yeah.
And
everybody at my school watched it.
Everybody
was talking about it that morning.
Yeah.
Everybody was talking about the morning after it happened.
The Monday next. Yeah, the next Monday. Everybody.
And everybody was teasing me because Hulk Hogan lost and they knew I was a big Hulkamaniac.
Oh, yeah. I just remember Andre turns the Hulkster around. You know, Virgil up on stage. A headbutt. A second headbutt. Andre spins the Hulkster around. Covers him. One. Two. Shoulders up. Three. You know, and Jesse's like, Andre the Giant's in his... No, he's...
But for me, it's...
And Vince McMahon going, no, he's not either. And then he said, I surrender the title to Ted DiBiase.
Well, but it's the moment. It's the moment when the two girls are in the ring.
Yes.
They're pointing at each other.
And Hogan looks back.
That's the moment. And what made that great is you can't... Like, the idea that this guy, who was already an established, well-known, respected referee...
Dave
Hebner. The fact
it was Dave Hebner at
Dave
that
Hebner,
point.
Yeah. The fact that he was...
Dave Hebner refereed the Savage Steamboat.
Yeah. The fact that he was there, we didn't know he had a twin.
No.
Nobody knew, so nobody could see this coming.
Yeah.
And the fact that you had these two in the ring, and I'm even sitting there, I remember going to a kid going, fuck, did he have a twin, or did they do an unbelievable makeup job, or is it like plastic surgery?
That was the gimmick. No, the gimmick was that the $1 million man paid for plastic surgery for this other guy to look like Dave Hebner.
Exactly.
That was the gimmick.
It really was just something, it happened once. It will not happen again.
No.
It can't.
No,
that's what makes it just so cool.
Yeah. No, and it did. And Andre, and it was Hulk. That was the end of when you talk about CM Punk and his board of championship reigns.
Mm-hmm.
That ended the 4+ year reign of Hulk Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whatever it was, 400 days reign of Hulk Hogan. So that itself was significant. My first moment. Was Hulk Hogan winning the title, his first title. My second moment is him losing his first title, right?
Yeah.
4 years later. And, of course, the ramifications of that leading to Randy Savage then winning the title tournament, right?
And all
of that, right? Yeah. And the best part about that, you talked about how it was still DiBiase at the time, and then Honky Tonk Man is really the catalyst for the greatest storyline of all time, because
he refused to lose the belt.
Well, for two reasons, though.
Yeah.
He refused to lose the belt. You said the plan, and it's true, was all along for a jealousy thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the way they appeased everybody
was,
we're going to give Savage a title, and then Hogan, at next WrestleMania, we're going to do that jealousy thing with you winning it back. So that kept Hogan happy, that kept Savage happy.
Yep.
DiBiase's happy at this point.
Well, DiBiase was working with Hogan and Savage and making a shitload of money, you know, working main event
with them. Oh, so. Of course. I mean, he's a consummate professional anyway. It's just one of those things, but he was going to be the champion, for God's sakes. I mean, you can't say that didn't piss him off a little bit,
well,
right?
Of course it did. But you know how many guys were promised the
belt?
But they took care of him.
I mean, you know.
They took care of him. A lot of guys were promised the belt and didn't get it back in there.
Yeah.
Guys with Bad News Brown, too, or Alan.
That's true,
I don't have one for a while. When's your next one here?
My next one is in 1989.
Yeah, much sooner than mine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I actually have two in 1989.
Okay.
My if you're talking about must-see moments, for me, a moment, the second main event.
Yeah.
The mega powers explode, you know, and I think that's just...
Everything that starts in that Saturday Night's Main Event I'm talking about...
Finish, and every... Yeah, exactly.
Explodes here in... This is the end of Act 2. If that's Act 1, this is... And the end of Act 1 is Savage getting the belt. This is the end of Act 2, and then Act 3 is the lead to actual WrestleMania.
Is Hogan
winning the belt back?
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're looking at
the denouement,
storytelling is told in three arcs, right? In three acts,
like
and
McDonald's.
Look at it, yeah.
No, it's
there
two.
That's two. But that is it. A good storyline should have three arcs to it. And
is one of the Covenant?
What the?
The Ark of the Covenant.
Fucking talk about it. Lust in your eyes.
lust in your eyes. Yeah. I mean, we talk about it all the time, and so I don't know that we need to go over too terribly much. But it really is it's Akeem, the big boss man, against Rand, the mega powers. And
it's not
and
the match, though. The match is important.
Well,
because when he walks
to me,
out
it's the slap. Okay, there's a couple of points. It's Elizabeth being knocked off the apron.
Mm-hmm.
It's Hulk Hogan picking Elizabeth up and carrying her to the back. That image of her carrying her to the back and Savage looking with his arms straight out and then pointing and looking and then getting double axe handled by Akeem from behind.
The thing about this night for me is Hogan did his part. He was a sympathetic babyface. He's turned on by his best friend. He's attacked in the backstage. Savage steals the show, and it's Savage's goddamn intensity.
I'll disagree a little bit in that Hogan does his part, but you see Savage's point.
Well, that's the thing.
And
I'm saying Savage steals. It's Savage who steals the show.
Yeah.
His intensity in everything he does in this is so unbelievable.
That's his career.
It
Savage's intensity in everything he does.
He's so charismatic that when he attacks Hogan, he's so vicious when he attacks
Hogan. I just picture Savage brushing his teeth with intensity. Like, really.
But he's so vicious when he attacks Hogan in the back, and then he cuts that promo, and the Lust in Your Eyes promo, towards the end. Because this is going on, there's other stuff in the ring. I think it's DiBiase and Hercules.
I think ends the show or something, yeah.
But it's that other stuff that's going on that they keep on cutting back to. And it's Savage who definitely, he's unbelievable.
In the backstage, talk to him, and then, it really was.
Everybody else does the role, but it's Randy Savage that just... He's so intense, and again, when you watch this, like we were watching, because we're recording this on December 22nd. We were watching SmackDown from earlier in the week.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're watching, Ziggler.
The live talk, SmackDown. Yeah.
Ziggler talking really slow, and Miz talking really slow,
and AJ talking
giving
really
their lines,
slow. And Kane
and just giving their lines, and it's so practiced and so perfect, and it's so. And here's Savage, and the amount of it doesn't feel real.
I know. I'll tell you what it feels
felt
like. No.
Like important
you know what
real?
The thing is? I'll tell you now, and what it didn't feel like back in the '80s when there were guys that did this, because we all recognize this cadence, okay?
Yeah.
And this is the McMahon cadence.
Oh yeah.
Vince McMahon says, "Say it just like this."
Yes.
And so you practice it just like this. There's that story about Test, of all people, the late Test, Andrew Martin, about his promo against Bobby Lashley, I think, in a Royal Rumble. And we all thought they were having a match at the Royal Rumble for the ECW title, and then he lost to Lashley on the ECW show before the Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody thought that was fucked up, and then he lost at the Rumble as well. But it was because he could not.
He cut an incredible promo in practice.
Yeah,
and then couldn't do the same thing live.
No, he couldn't. He mimicked Stephanie. Stephanie said, "Do it like this," and he went like this, and then he couldn't do that live because it wasn't that right because he did it, and it wasn't even that he cut a shitty promo there. It just it was different than what they wanted.
Yeah.
And the thing was, is that. This is what you see, and is that this is the McMahon cadence.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the overscripting of the shit.
Okay, and it's a good point, but it's getting away from what I was talking about. We're talking about this and how boring, but the point is,
I'm
watching,
yes.
It just doesn't feel real. It feels like performers. When you're watching Randy Savage, it feels like a guy who literally hates that other guy.
Yeah.
Has a point, and, you know it's not real, but it feels real in the moment.
Yeah,
and that's what they so rarely capture nowadays.
You talk about Randy Savage. I mean,
they were able to capture it a lot, and this captures it so well. They don't capture it now.
The thing with Randy Savage, though, I mean, you talk about the modern era, is that he would never taken that from Stephanie.
No,
he gives it to Stephanie.
Rumor. All right, let's move on. What do you got next? What do you got next? I don't have anything for a while still.
Oh, okay. So we just did the second main event in 1989. Let's stay in 1989.
See, there you go.
We talked about moments,
uh-huh.
matches, and events.
Yes.
Matches.
Mm-hmm.
The Chi-Town Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
Ric Flair and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Mm-hmm.
Just a tremendous match. One of the best matches that, and I had to throw some NWA, WCW, because it had been largely WWE.
Well, and you know what? For me, it's their match at, I think it's, Is it Chi-Town Rumble? No, I don't think it's that one. If I was going to pick it, I would have picked the one where...
You're talking about the May one, the Great American, or whatever, the May where afterwards Terry Funk...
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. That's not Chi-Town Rumble. I wrote Chi-Town, but you're right.
Chi-Town is a great, great, great match. It goes like 57 minutes. Like
this
that.
Happened on my birthday. I think it was May 7th that this happened.
Yeah, whereas the one I'm talking about is, I think it's Russell War or something like that. Russell War 89, I think it might be.
I think you're right.
That's the one.
Russell War 89. You're right. And that's what I said Chi-Town Rumble, but you're right. I meant Russell War 89, actually.
Yeah, because and the reason why it's so great is because, like you said,
great
off,
match.
You have the great match, and then you have the great angle afterwards.
Yes.
And it encapsulates. Here's Flair working as a heel against Steamboat,
mm-hmm.
turning babyface as soon as he wins the match,
yes.
and getting the heat for another great feud. So you go from one feud that was, and they didn't draw well. That's the amazing thing.
Well, nothing did for them.
No, but you go from one feud that gave you some of the best ring action, probably the best ring action of Ric Flair's career,
yeah.
to another feud that gave you some of the most intense ring action of Ric Flair's career.
But
and this was the best year of his.
The thing is, you
in ring wise,
yes.
89, 90, like that ring, that was his best year.
But you look at wrestling in general back then, though, is you used to be able to go from one feud. And even to turn like this and then just move into another and everybody kind of accept it and forget and move on and get you right into that. That used to be, people used to know how to tell those stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I can think of like Demolition. I remember every time Demolition turned face and heel and face, it was to go against a completely, there was a reason to go
yeah.
against another team and you just, you could accept it and see it and do it and move on.
Mm-hmm.
But there was never this. Like The Miz.
Yeah.
You know, like, what?
Or Alberto Del Rio.
Yeah, you know, or your heel now, or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, he at least tagged the thing, but there's no person or reason unless it's going to be fucking Heath Slater, and it's not.
Yeah. Exactly.
So that's the whole thing.
And that's it. But, I mean, this is, like I say, it gives you the best of Flair in, he wrestles a great match and then cuts a great promo. It gives you Steamboat doing his best thing, which is a great promo. It gives you Funk doing his best thing, which is being an insane heel.
Yeah. And
it gives you these three things all separately, like all this different stuff, and it encapsulates what made
exactly.
what was the best.
That was
WCW
the word. It encapsulates
way.
Exactly the time period, and that's where I was thinking. If you are going to go back and
I
not be a fan, I think that's it.
I almost put this in. This
yeah.
was on my short list of ones to do I or don't I, so I'm glad you have it.
But
you haven't stole any of mine yet, and I haven't stolen any of yours.
No,
that's
that
many
really
yet.
Good. So where do you go to now?
Like I said, I don't have stuff until 93.
Oh, okay.
So
let's go to 92 with me.
Okay.
I have the Royal Rumble, 1992.
Mm-hmm. More Ric Flair.
Ric Flair. And winning the WWF title for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
It has Hogan, Undertaker, Flair, Roddy Piper, Boss Man. You talk about Brett's in it, I'm pretty sure. Texas Tornado is in it. You know, Tito Santana is in this. Like, there is just a plethora. Teddy Biasi, British Bulldog, you know, Brian Knobbs, you know, all the top talent. Jake the Snake,
yeah.
you know, Randy Savage, just you name it.
Dusty. I thought Dusty was in this one, wasn't he?
No, I don't think so.
Maybe that's next year? Actually, you know what? Dusty wasn't. No.
No. Dusty.
That's 91.
I don't think he was in it. 91 was him and Dustin against Virgil and DiBiase.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So, but no, I mean, Haku was in it. I mean,
there you go.
And you had.
Barbarian.
The thing in the bar, yeah, but the other part of it, too.
Well, I remember is there was like three or four press slams for Flair
yes.
where somebody could have tossed him out of the ring and they never did.
And they never did. Most by the Bulldog. But he's a smart guy. But the thing is what. It's Ric Flair. It's one of the most star-studded. You talk about Hall of Famers in terms of main events.
Well, here's the thing about it.
It is not fair to Flair. Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon
on commentary, great
fucking
call.
Made that rumble.
Yeah.
They made everybody look like a billion bucks.
The significance of it is that when he comes out at number three,
yeah. kiss your meal ticket goodbye, Brain.
Up until that point, we hadn't seen somebody who wasn't in the top. You know, portion. You'd seen your Iron Man people, but there's no. Everybody.
Well, you talk about you've seen your Iron Man people. This was 88 was a television special. 89, 90, 91. There had been three, count maybe four, Royal Rumbles.
Was it Rick Martel who had the record at the time?
At like 45 minutes or something.
And, you know, that's it, though. I mean, you just assume nobody can survive what he has to survive.
That's right.
So you came out there. I remember watching it live with my friend Brett, and I was turning to each other and kind of cheering because we were cheering against Flair, and we were kind of like, ha-ha, he's not going to win. And then kind of went, you know, it's kind of shitty. He's not going to win. Because then we realized, you know, it'd be good to have Flair as the champion.
Stir the pot a bit, yeah.
Yeah, and then he wins. And that's the amazing thing. Now we've seen the guy being number one win like three times.
Yeah, and now it's not a story. It really isn't.
It's not.
You get Benoit and Reigns and, one or two. But, no, and then Sid was in it. I mean, that was the thing that started off the Sid and Hogan thing. And that was also a story in that Rumble, was that Hogan got booed.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the first time on pay-per-view.
And they changed the audio when they went to television.
When they went to the VHS or whatever and on the subsequent televisions. But that was the first time I can remember a live crowd being against Hogan.
Sure.
You know? So, it may have happened before, and of course, but live to make it to air, I guess. I'm sure it happened in the arenas leading up, too. But to make it to air, so.
So what else? What's the next one you got, then?
Also in 92.
Seriously?
Yes. Yes, 1992, because we talk about January.
And this is good, though, because you'll notice I don't have anything. I have something in 85, I have something in 88, and I don't have something until 93. And that's largely because I know you're going to cover these areas, and you're doing that for me. Which is good, which is why, you know, we wanted to do it this way. We took a different tact on this, too.
We did. My thing here is with, and I've got a lot of different reasons for this, but, and one of them, probably
you
maybe.
You know that we're supposed to throw out three, right? You aren't keeping, you aren't doing every one.
No, I'm not doing everyone. I got my bottom ones at the end here.
Okay.
But primarily here is my own reaction to this. And I went to January of 1992. I'm going to go all the way to October of 1992. And that's Bret Hart's beating Ric Flair for the WWF title.
Mm-hmm.
Couple reasons for this. Okay. Thanksgiving night, Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
Canadian Thanksgiving.
Yeah. That's what I said, Thanksgiving. But to me, the first, the main, I guess, reason that I picked this is the holy shit moment of it. The holy shit factor in that, you know, watching Mean Gene standing on the black stage like he used to do and saying, you know, please welcome the new champion. And everybody thought, you know, me and the man they call B watching, thinking, oh, well, Randy Savage won the title back. And because he was the babyface that was fighting Flair. And then all of a sudden, Bret Hart's music playing. And we're like, holy fuck, are you kidding me? Like, Bret Hart never even mentioned in any sort of breath as the fucking to get a championship match. So that was out of the blue. No one expected it. The other part of it is that the Bret Hart winning the title, we talk about moments and things and what should you go back. It really ushered in the new era of WWE.
Well, the thing about the significance is the reason he gets the belt is he's on a steroid, you know, freak.
Mm-hmm.
And
he is on IcoPro, the integrated conditioning program.
But
you
got to
want
talking,
it.
But we're talking about moments.
Yeah.
The steroid trial is the moment that leads to this. I mean, it's not...
You can go back and watch. Yeah.
No, exactly. You can't really go back and watch it.
Yeah.
But...
You can watch all the Inside Edition coverage.
Yeah, exactly. But go back and when you see this and you go, Rick, yeah, I mean, so why did it happen like that? Well, that's why.
Yeah.
Ric Flair wanted to leave back to WCW.
Yeah.
You know, that was home to him, and he wanted to go back.
And Vince had always said, if you ever want to go back, you just tell me,
yeah,
and I'll let you go back, and he did.
Exactly, and so they had to get the belt off of him, and they were going to go with Savage.
Yeah.
And that didn't work out.
It was actually between Bret Hart and Tito Santana.
According to Tito, bullshit.
No, according to Bret Hart, too.
Really?
Yeah, Bret Hart sold that story.
Really?
It was near Tito, and they got it. Yeah, because Bret was younger. That was the whole thing.
It should have been Bret. Cheeto should, at that point, was not, you know.
Can you imagine?
No.
What would have life been like?
El Matador with the title?
If Tito Santana won the title.
Yeah, no, that's
wow.
Good. Yeah. Yeah, it would have been different.
That was one of those.
That's the thing, though. I mean, they're not going to go to, you know,
you're
a dude
that we talk
Warrior.
Comics. Remember they had that What If comic there?
Yeah, exactly.
What If.
But yeah.
No, it's, I don't know, but Brett, that was, it was an out of the blue, it was a completely new guy, it was a complete reset, but it ushered in that era then. Because the next, really, 4 years, 5 years, were the Bret Hart year.
Were the Bret Hart and
they
Shawn
were the Bret Hart era, though. It
Bret
was
Hart and Shawn Michaels' ascension.
Well, I don't think Kenneth Cameron and them had anything to do with it. But it was.
I mean, Shawn Michaels is by next. But
Shawn Michaels, Lex Luger, Diesel, it was Bret. Bret was a constant in that time.
By 94, Shawn was, you know, in many ways at the same level.
But even
Bret's first title defense is against Intercontinental Champion Shawn Michaels on pay-per-view, right?
At the Survivor Series, yeah.
So really is their era.
It is, but it ushered that era in him winning the title, right? So that to me in 92 is a significant moment because I think that plays in and that bleeds over to the next, you know, 5 years, kind of thing. But you said you have something in 93, and I do not, so
okay.
Go.
Well, I mean,
the USS Intrepid.
No.
Oh.
But here's the thing. I mean, we're talking about this. You talk about the USS Intrepid.
Uh-huh.
You talk about Lex Luger and Yokozuna.
And Peter Taglianetti.
And it's shit. And that's the thing is, WCW, Ric Flair could have some good moments, but WCW, as a rule, wasn't consistently giving us good stuff, and that's why you don't have to stuff down.
93, are you going to do what I think you're doing?
Yeah, it's not
good.
You
going to December?
No.
Oh, okay.
This is not good wrestling consistently. I mean, we talk about Bret Hart. Bret Hart's giving us great matches at the top of the card.
Yeah.
And below that, you have Nails versus Big Boss.
Remember, though, when Bret Hart fought Papa Shango?
Yeah.
And Virgil?
Yeah.
Because he would fight anybody. Remember when that was actually the deal? That was great.
That was
that
a gimmick.
He
yeah,
had
no,
to take over
Ric
Flair's contracts, remember?
Yeah.
So that's why he could fight baby faces. That was awesome.
The fact is, though, is that while he could give us great matches, the product itself was generally shit.
Mm-hmm.
This was not a good product around that time, around him. I mean, he was left with very little. There was nobody. They had purged a lot of the talent.
You mean Bret?
Yeah.
Okay.
They had purged a lot of the talent who were suspected of being steroid users. They were doing the heavy testing and this and that.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, over in Japan.
Meanwhile.
You had the greatest wrestling in the history of the industry. If you go back over into Japan, what you're going to see in that era is the crowds and the hot atmosphere of that company is actually equivalent to what you see in the Attitude Era in the WWE. As far as in Japan, that was their Attitude Era. The difference is the Attitude Era gave us some good in-ring work and a lot of entertaining, incredibly entertaining TV and good in-ring work. This gave them incredible, unreal, beyond belief in-ring work and good TV. But it was about the in-ring work. And the companies, you know, over there were, wrestling was hot in Japan. And you look at, there's like, you know, I mean, like, I think from over a 10-year period of over like, you know, 1992 to 2002, something like that, there's like 4 5-star matches in WWE. FWWE, and meanwhile there's like 23 in like a 2-year period in Japan, something crazy like that. Like, just, you cannot look at and try and understand the history of, I think, the last 25 years without acknowledging that was the best in-ring era, in-ring work ever seen in history, and that what happens there has a huge influence. What happened in Japan used to be the same. What happens in Japan is what's going to be hot 2 years later in North America. And in America, and there's something to that. So I recommend you go back, and there's so many 5-star matches to watch. I say watch Kenta Kobashi versus Steve Williams. It's on YouTube. Watch Kenta Kobashi, Steve Williams. To me, that kind of is a perfect snapshot of the strong style wrestling that was so unbelievable in Japan in that era.
I'm sorry, what? No, I do. Yeah, and you said the American Bias Kid. I mean, I think that definitely is. And I go back now and again with the benefit of the internet and listening to, you know, people like Meltzer and even with being able to hear some of the old Wade Keller shows back then.
Fucker.
I know. But the thing was, is that that is what got them through the 90s in terms of, you know, Repo Man versus Crush.
Exactly.
You know, on Superstars. Well, they could watch this stuff from Japan, and that was kind of the... That's what got them through, and the fact that...
What's getting us through is Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart. Nothing really else.
Exactly. But that's what's really making them and getting them through. It's kind of like...
It's Steamboat and...
The funny thing is it like right now, in 2012, what was getting us through for a little while was going just going back and watching old shit.
That's true.
You know what I mean? There just wasn't. But then I watched that Japanese pay-per-view this year, or a few of the matches from that new... from a month ago or so, mm-hmm. or whatever it was. It was fucking great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but at least now there's enough stuff that eventually I can feel good about it. I mean, it was about this time last year where I wasn't, you know, with, you know, again, Pedigree 1-2-3 on CM Punk, and TNA wasn't doing good, and there wasn't anything I could find that I liked.
Yeah.
Back then, that's what it was. That's what you could find that you'd like. It was a shitload harder to see, which is why...
That's the difference.
Only the...
And that's why I'm saying you should see it now, though.
Yes, yes, because it's more readily available.
I don't think if you're going to know wrestling over the last 25 years, it should be completely ignored.
Well,
I
that's the whole world spectrum story. You're right. I mean, to that end, I mean, it's not even on my list, but I'm saying this, when worlds collide.
I know.
You know, is it on your list?
No, it's not.
I mean, but that's to
the
same point.
Though, right?
But that's to the same point. Yeah, I believe
that's
it's 94. Yeah, it's the same point.
It's a collection. It's a,
international. That's when
it's
international.
It was a CMLL or AAA? It was AAA, wasn't it?
AAA,
and WCW helped co-promote it.
It did.
It was all AAA, and it took place in Los Angeles. This 1994 when worlds collide, and it's got like 4.5, 5 star, 4.5, 4.5.
Chris Cruz and Mike Tenay called it.
Yeah, it's
that was
it's,
Mike Tenay's like.
Many people think it's
debut.
The best pay per view in history.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I mean, but I also look at that, and you look at sort of that international, and who was on that show, and like, you know, like the Eddie Guerreros, and
mm-hmm.
Louis Spicoli's,
mm-hmm.
and Conan, and stuff, and how they got then put into the mainstream.
Absolutely, it was a
right?
big deal. That event was important for some of the talent acquisition of ECW and WCW down the road, right? So,
but I think that's part of it. That gives you that international, and that's, again, where you had to go look at the international influence
mm-hmm.
Of everything, you know,
mm-hmm.
and what is your next?
96.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm at 94.
Okay.
And we're talking about matches, moments, and events that you need to see. I think you need to see Bret against Owen at
mm-hmm.
WrestleMania 10.
Mm-hmm.
I just
As a pure wrestling match on a WrestleMania.
I fucking love that match.
Yeah.
And I can't say go back when you say events. I can't make you go back and watch WrestleMania 10 because, like, Doink the Clown was in it.
Well, that's it.
And Men on a Mission were in it.
I was going to say Bret Hart
and Crush
and
Randy Savage are the shittiest fucking Falls Count Anywhere match.
But what
I've
happens
ever
that
been.
Night? You have the ladder, first ladder match.
We have the ladder. Yeah, the first televised ladder match.
And
right?
you have Bret Hart and Owen, and you have Shawn and Razor. So again, it comes back to Bret and Shawn. That's what gets us through.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
a lot of shit
yeah.
around it.
And that ladder match, I remember, like, I mean, you say it doesn't hold up, but I just remember, like, I was actually out. We got it for my brother's birthday.
It holds up to us because we can appreciate it. But I think somebody goes back and watches it who's
yeah.
seen current
if
ladder matches.
If you've seen anything, yeah.
You won't
seen
appreciate
the Hardys,
what it was.
Least, yeah, yeah.
But it was how innovative it was at the time, so.
Yeah, and my brother, I remember, like, my brother watched it live, and I was out that day. I forget what I had to do, but I got a tape. My brother just, we got it for my brother's birthday. And he just, and B was just like, there's this ladder, and it's like, all he could talk about was this fucking ladder, and I'm like, okay, this ladder, like, he's telling himself that what they did with this ladder, I'm like, fuck off.
Well,
and I watched it, I'm like, they did?
I remember my friend, Mark Lopez was his name, and I remember him saying to me, looking at me,
A.C. Slater?
And he looks at
that's
me.
Mario Lopez.
Mario. He looks at me and he looks very serious. He goes, "That's my favorite match of all time because I can't believe the punishment they dished out on each other."
Yeah.
And like I say, that's what was different about it.
I can't believe you knew Mario Lopez.
Mark.
Oh.
What I like.
I'm not a Mark.
Keep in mind, you he was, but
oh.
no, you're, now,
well, the
but,
punishment they dished out on each other.
Good point. But the thing is, that also was the very, very first ever pay-per-view in Calgary. So that was the very, very first ever pay-per-view
WrestleMania
match.
10 was the first ever pay-per-view. Yeah, that's true.
It's the very first ever pay-per-view.
Unless
match
you
want to
count the pre-show where
and
we
saw
a little bit of the Heavenly Bodies against the Bushwhackers.
I didn't. I watched, that was the first match I watched, Bret Hart versus Owen Hart.
On pay-per-view.
On
that's
pay-per-view
true.
Ever.
That
so,
is very true, actually.
You know, for my own home. So that was really cool for me personally.
Yeah.
So, okay, what's your next one?
I go to 96 here now, too. So
okay,
you
go to 96, I go to 96. This might be the first time we're stealing each other's. I'm going first because you've gone more. So, NWO Forms.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying watch Bash of the Beast, even though it's a really great event. You have, you know, I think it's Eddie Guerrero. I think you have, I think it's
Rey Mysterio and fucking Dean Malenko. No, Dean Malenko fights the Disco Inferno, which
yes,
is really
he fights
great.
The first
Psychosis against Rey Mysterio. Was
that's
awesome.
Right.
And Chris Jericho, does he fight?
No, but Chris Benoit took on somebody, too. I think it might have been like Ultimo Dragon
Nancy?
Or something like that.
No,
fucking. Yeah, Public Enemy had a tables match, I think.
Yeah,
know,
yeah
the,
it's probably
against,
Nasty Boys or fucking some
yeah,
shit, yeah.
Yeah, but it was entertaining, I remember. And
well,
the whole
card,
event,
now, I mean,
it really
was
WCW
really
was on fire.
Get, yeah, they were, well,
fire.
They were a lot like TNA is in 2012. Is that they were starting to get good. You could have your ho-hums, but when they were cooking, they were cooking. And this was where then the NWO just put them all over the top.
That's exactly it, though. I mean, while I say...
And I'm at a point now where TNA, if they had the right deal that could put them over the top, would go over the top. Right?
Well, I'm saying I could definitely say to people, you can watch 1996 Bash on the Beach. Watch the whole thing, and you'll probably enjoy it. It's a really good show. But the important thing is to watch the main event and the whole thing.
You know what the
you
thing is?
You have to watch the whole
honestly,
thing. You have to listen to the announcer to watch
you
the
don't.
Stories.
But you know what? When you watch
do.
This, you talk about a moment. I had the NWO on my thing as well. But the thing is, you can watch the moments. You can watch every moment we have on that we've listed. If you've been watching wrestling for 3 or 5 years, okay, and you're going to watch this moment, you need to watch the moment. But it's not going to hit you like it hit me and it hit you and it hit B and it probably hit Willie here. It hit because we had been watching Hulk Hogan since my number one moment, his first title reign in 1984.
For 12 years.
The baby face of all fucking
and
babies. Think of John, for today's fans, John Cena is a baby face until 2020 and then turns heel.
Well, but that's the thing is, and there was no, like it made sense, but you didn't see it coming. It was well told.
I did not see it coming because all I heard on the hotline things was that it was Hogan versus Nash and Scott Hall versus Sting was the programs for the summer.
Yep, exactly.
And so it's like, okay, well then Hogan comes down. It's like, okay, well here you go to start.
Yeah, because it was a 3-on-2, and you thought he was
and
there.
And you thought Nash was a big tall guy, that's Hogan's M.O.,
exactly.
To fight the big guy. Okay, that makes sense, right?
And it's just a moment you should see because it's significant. It does get great heat.
It will mean it.
Watch,
it won't
it
mean
it.
It
doesn't mean as much.
It
it's never going to be as impactful.
Yeah.
But it's something you should be familiar with. And so I would say to people, they definitely should watch that because and watch the whole thing.
The
because
promo
a big part
and
of it,
the garbage being thrown.
The garbage being thrown. Hogan's promo, your first heel promo, the garbage being thrown. Plus, just Bobby Heenan, especially, but as an announcer.
Wow.
So good.
Wow.
Selling it there.
But whose side is he on?
Yeah.
Wow. Sorry. You probably shouldn't have said that. In
actually,
hindsight.
I think he should have.
In hindsight, well, I agree. I think he just should have been quiet, but, you know.
I think he should have.
I agree. When the people bitched about that, oh, he kind of gave it away a bit. And it's like, and I heard, I think it was Nick Keller said it, but I didn't think anything of it as a mark at the time.
No, no.
And someone had no inside knowledge at the time. Just a guy watching Scramble Vision on the old pay-per-view station, just listening to it basically on the radio.
Yeah.
When Heenan said what side he's on, I didn't think anything of it because Heenan hated Hogan for years.
Exactly.
You know? And then he turned and it was like, B and I were like, holy fuck. Like, we're... That was the two, we'd mentioned the two holy shit moments that I'd ever had in my life, and I remember sitting in my parents' basement on the same fucking red couch watching, two holy shit moments, three really impactful moments I remember that is the one, the Mega Powers not exploding, but that main event, when with the slap and the drop, Next one is Bret Hart winning the title, because we're like, holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
First time I ever said holy shit. Second was holy shit was when Hogan went heel.
Absolutely.
Holy shit. Really.
And that's why you do need to watch it. It's not, like you say, it's not going to be as impactful. But it's important for you know, the history.
But if it make me go holy shit, you know what I mean? Like, just watch it. Yeah. It is. It's significant.
Okay. My next event's in 97. What do you got?
Oh, I still have a 90. I still have a 96.
Okay, go. Yeah.
We haven't really talked about it because
I mean, I have one, but it's not. It's in my three that doesn't go in.
Okay. Well, you just did your NWO in 96. You can talk about your NWO. You can also talk about your Psalms. You can talk about John 3:16.
Mm-hmm.
But Austin 3:16 says, "I just whooped your ass." That's a significant moment.
Absolutely, it is.
I mean, that King of the Ring speech, Austin 3:16. I'm wearing an Owen 3:16 shirt here as we do this.
Says, "I just broke your neck."
I just broke your neck. But I mean, that Austin 3:16 ushered in the biggest money maker in the history of the business.
Yep.
So that's significant to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I agree. I kind of was assuming you would, hoping you would have that one on there.
Mm-hmm.
So, when's your next one?
97.
All right.
My favorite year.
You go ahead and do it, because we'll see if you steal mine.
Yeah, I have late 97. What do you got?
Late 97.
Fuck, why don't I have... Shit.
Go ahead.
All right.
How late?
I'm changing mine, like, right now.
You're not allowed to do that.
Yeah, I am.
Fuck you.
Middle
97. No, you
can't. I'm doing middle 97 now.
Fuck you.
Why?
Because then I'll never get to the ones I put on the side. If you're not stealing mine.
Okay. Mid, we're going to talk about all of them anyway.
Ah, fuck it. You're right. We are.
Okay. So, middle 97 instead of late 97.
Okay.
I was going to do DX forming, but I'm going to go with the I Quit match.
Oh,
Brett
yeah.
and Steve Austin.
Yeah.
And just that, again, the blood dripping down Steve Austin, threw his teeth down all the girl as he's in the sharpshooter and struggling to go. They'll never do that again. Well, I shouldn't say they'll never do that again, but not anytime soon. And it made Austin.
I think it's the best WrestleMania match of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And Owen versus Brett was certainly probably maybe number two, but I think that's the best WrestleMania match of all time.
This will surprise you, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I will go with Brett and Owen because it's an actual wrestling match. And you're the more actual wrestling guy of the
yeah,
two of
that's
us.
That's true.
But that wrestling, and I think, remember my sister saying this, I think during that WrestleMania that we watched at her house when she didn't know if she could take the foil out of the pie. How do you take the pie? Do I take this right out?
Oh, fuck.
She's a teacher.
Yeah,
holy
no
shit.
Wonder she's in a lot of trouble.
But she had said it. I just don't see that wrestling like they did with like Owen and Davey. Like the chain, that wrestling, and that's what I like.
The story, the telling.
Not even a story. Just that you'll lock up. You go into the hammerlock. You duck under. Underneath that. The chain.
You'll see it. You'll see it if you watch a Rob Van Dam match. You'll see the same chain 4,000 times. Every single match. And then they'll do the nip up and look at each other.
But they don't look at each other. That was the thing. They didn't do the nip up. The nip up was like,
so
the nip
obvious.
Up was to do a kick into a head scissors.
It wasn't so choreographed.
No, exactly. Well, it was choreographed. That was
but
the thing.
It wasn't
didn't seem
like it.
Choreographed.
No, exactly.
They did the match, but it was moves and it was good and it was great. And that's what I got out of Brett and Owen.
You're completely wasted at this point.
I am. But that's not what I got.
I can tell because that won't let me finish a sentence. So, you're a little higher pitch.
What?
This is what I've been looking
Which
for.
Which WrestleMania are we talking about again?
What are we watching?
13. But I mean, that was a brutal bloodbath. And it was my pick, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
But it was a brutal bloodbath, but I would put Owen and Brett over that. I would.
Yeah. Well, okay. Awesome. I got the screw job. And that's probably the one that you had that you've changed, right?
No, I had DX forming is the one that I changed.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
I think that was significant.
It's definitely significant.
For the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
I think the bigger significance, you can't go back and watch it, was when Vince and Mick Foley saw this, when Vince said, you know what, I want to see, you know that, well, you can't go back and watch it. The Vince McMahon, you know, I think everybody's tired of good guys versus bad guys. Yeah. Right? That speech, and that was played out from a backstage speech where he said, like, I understand that the T.L. Hoppers and Duke the Dumpster Drosies of the world ain't fucking working now in 97. You guys need to start putting more of yourselves into these characters. And that's really when the Attitude Era, and in Mick Foley's eyes, and I agree, it was born.
Like Dolph Ziggler's doing when he's reading those lines they wrote for him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know.
But
good
no,
guys
I mean, it's a screw
bad
job.
Guys.
You need to watch the Screwjob match. You need to watch that match. I would actually prefer if you watch that match and watch Bret Hart Wrestling in the Shadows. They're both on YouTube now.
Yeah.
I think you should watch Wrestling in the Shadows to get the full effect and full understanding. But no matter what, the Screwjob, you cannot deny its moment. It's so many levels.
Well,
the introduction of the Vince McMahon character.
I was going to say to Screwjob, and I mean, but the bigger moment is
the copy
Brett
billion times.
Screwed Brett.
Yeah,
that interview.
It's all part, which is why I say watch Wrestling with Shadows.
Yeah, exactly.
That's in there.
Yes,
so,
it is. Yeah, so that's all part of the deal, right? So yeah.
So I would say watch Wrestling with Shadows and that match. It's kind of because it's kind of the same moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah, you can't deny that one. I have 98 next. Where do you have?
Yeah, I have 98 as well.
Okay, mine's, early, I guess this is kind of like April of 98. What do you got here?
Tyson and Austin.
You go ahead, then.
Tyson and Austin. No, but I mean, that was January 98. That was after the Royal Rumble. Was Mike Tyson coming to the baddest man on the planet. Hmm. And then he was about to announce what he was going to do for WrestleMania. And then the glass shatters, and Stone Cold comes in, and then he flips off Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson shoves him. He shoves him back. You know, Tyson and Austin, JR is calling, and everybody's doing this massive pull apart. Austin peels out of the ring, and Vince says, "You ruined it! You ruined it!" And Austin's giving Vince the finger, and
It was so perfect. Austin's the right guy at the right time.
Yeah.
They're still losing the WCW in the
ratings. Oh, yeah, yeah.
But not for long.
And no, not until after Austin wins.
When Mike Tyson shows up, they start to win a couple times. And
No, they didn't.
I think so.
No, you're dead wrong.
Are you sure?
Yeah. 83 straight weeks.
Yeah.
Ended like 2 weeks out, the week after WrestleMania, with one hand tied behind your back.
Oh, you're right. You're totally right.
That was what won in Philadelphia.
You're
the
totally
main
right.
event, of course.
You're totally right. But that said, though, the ratings closed the gap, though.
Oh yeah,
With Tyson there. Yeah,
unlike your mom,
it never closes the gap.
Never closes the gap.
ever.
With one hand tied behind her.
All right. Mine's from about the same era in 1998, but it's different. Completely different, though.
You don't
say. Because, again, I took a different tact, and I think you're not going to talk about the last 25 years without talking about ECW to me. ECW is insignificant.
I thought about that. Yeah, it's in my three.
And so I was looking for the moment that kind of, to me, I wanted to show people, if you watch right now, if you watch Rob Van Dam, and he sucks, and he sucks ass, I want you to know that he was once great.
Yeah.
And I want you to know what it is about W or ECW that makes them different than what you see today and what you'll see in the future. You don't see what you see anymore from ECW, and you never will. So I wanted to give you a match that both shows you RVD, because he was their stand-up performer, and ECW and what ECW style represented and why it was different, the crowd was different. So the one I went with is him versus Bam Bam Bigelow.
Okay. When he wins the TV title.
And where he does the flip drive, double somersault into the fifth row of the crowd with Bam Bam.
Yes.
Because you'll never see that now.
No, you won't see
that anywhere ever again, probably. So to me, that encapsulates why it is that ECW had a cult following and still does to some point today, but why it was that it was still hot in 2005 is moments like that. So I wanted to give somebody that. So I recommend you watch Rob Van Dam versus Bam Bam Bigelow.
I would actually just recommend, and to be quite honest, is the the rise and fall of ECW, whatever it's called.
Well, yeah,
it's like 8 hours.
What,
it's
not a moment or match or what it is, but you're right. If you,
that DVD actually encapsulates
it has
everything pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
of
so
ECW.
Fucking good.
But you're right.
What,
I mean,
whatever's not in there, you can watch Hardcore Homecoming.
Yeah.
Or what it,
Hardcore
what,
Heaven or whatever it's called. Or yeah,
Hardcore Revolution. Hardcore Revolution.
Yeah, yeah, the other documentary.
The other documentary
that's
not WWE produced. And if you watch those back-to-back, you'll get it all.
Mm-hmm.
But ECW is important. It's significant in that it influenced WWE,
I,
plus a lot of guys that came
in,
out of there.
In my one of my three or whatever, my extras, was actually the Shane Douglas promo.
Throwing down
the NWA title and saying, I am not the man. Which starts the ECW, right?
Yeah.
And that just kicked it off because ECW was, I mean, and as I said, that's where if you watch that DVD, and it's very true, is that the, like, what do they call the ECW Revolution, whatever you want to call it?
Yeah.
It was the catalyst for the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
There would have been no Attitude Era had there been no ECW.
No. Nope.
Again, that's, you know, no doubt in my mind. So you're right. You do have to put some. You put the Japanese scene in and now the ECW, and that's you do have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So you know one. My next one was also a little different. Was
what year?
The Super 8. No. EC. No. No. My next one that doesn't go until like 2004.
All right, well, I got...
Well, I was running out of time. He only gave me 10 plus 3.
All right, well...
I'll throw in more, don't worry.
I've got one. Actually, I'm gonna cancel that off because I forgot.
What year are we up to now, 98?
This would have been 98, but you know what? Actually, the next one I have is actually 2000 because I forgot.
You had one that was 99.
No,
yes,
I do
you
have...
Told me earlier.
I have one that's 99. The problem is...
Tell me.
I realize I have 14.
I don't care.
So that's
I'm
going to
have, like, 30, so just go.
Well, the finger poke
of doom. The finger poke of doom, because we kind of had a little bit of a difference of opinion in the car about this one. Not an argument, but just, I just thought it was a little different. I mean, to me, it's significant, no
it's
doubt.
Very significant.
It is significant, no doubt. But I, again, don't know that you can go and watch the finger poke of doom on its own and say, oh, yeah. You know, it's not to me. It's not worth seeing.
Well, but
it's worth knowing about, and I guess you got to see it to know about it.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing: is if you watch the formation of the NWO,
mm-hmm.
right? Now
yes.
You've watched what you think is going to be Hogan or whatever, and instead Hogan turns, and then a few years later, you get on Nitro. That match finally set up that you've never seen Hogan versus Nash. And then they give you that. I think you get why it is people are so pissed off.
Could I go, though, and I said I'm just throwing another one out that I didn't have on my list. But a significant moment, would it not be Hogan and Sting at Starrcade?
Because it was the disappointment?
Because that was that's what drove WCW up.
And once it ended.
And then they fucked it up,
yeah.
And then it just become that.
The company was still hot after for a long time.
I give
right.
you that, I give you that. But WWF, with the Canada versus U.S., and Heart Foundation shit, was hot a year before they went up. WCW was slow a year before they went
exactly.
down. You know what I mean? Like, they went up,
yep,
and then they went down, and then eventually they intersected, and WWF became the hot shit, and where WCW...
Yep.
I think that's what... Well, I don't even think.
I know that's what
happened.
Is. Here's the reason why I wouldn't tell somebody to watch that. Why would you want to make somebody watch that? Such a bad match.
Oh, but you want to watch it in the finger poke of doom.
But it's... But
you know
it's
what I mean?
It's match.
The same reason.
No, it's... But, well, it's shorter. But it's
that's
like,
true.
First off, Nash comes out and cuts an excellent promo. That's the whole key.
Really?
So when I'm saying you watch the finger point of doom, you don't just watch
it. So you're watching it for Nash's good promo.
No, but the thing is...
His one good promo.
No, but the thing is, you watch the Nash's good promo to open. Because you have to understand the significance of it.
You have to watch all of Nitro.
Well, fuck, I know you're drunk now, but quit fucking cutting me off. Let me finish.
No, you have that.
Okay.
Yeah. What WrestleMania are we talking about?
Are we watching? Because what will happen is if you watch that Nitro, and when I say the finger pointing, you know, you got to watch the Nash sections of
okay.
that, right?
So
you're gonna have to watch the whole show, but
right.
But so you're gonna watch the opening. It's gonna talk about how Nash won the title from Goldberg last night, ending the streak. Then it's gonna have him cut a great promo on Hogan, and then it's gonna have the finger point of doom, and you can put that in context with the NWO forming of those days later. And I think it kind of does give somebody a going. Yeah, they really did fuck over their fan base here on this night. And so I think
yeah.
it works. I think it's important to understand why WCW went out of business.
You're right.
Which is why my next one
uh-huh.
is in 2000.
Okay. Well,
the Human Torch match.
Can we just go back to, quickly, though?
Okay.
No, wait. The Human Torch match?
Yes.
That's on your list?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to go back because we can't fix this. I think we would be remiss, I guess, if we're talking about the last 25 years, to talk about ending Goldberg's streak. And we didn't talk about Goldberg.
No.
And I think that the Georgia Dome,
the
Goldberg
Georgia,
and Hogan,
you're right.
Is a moment to see.
Yeah, no,
you know, I do. I mean, that would be, if we're talking about if we get three more, I think that'd be number four. If we get four more. But, you know what I mean? Like, that, I think we have to.
Well, you're talking about
that.
How one hand tied behind my back, they start to win the
yes.
What happens is.
That was the last time WCW won anything,
no.
though. Yes.
But that's the thing is WWE finally wins. WWF finally wins the ratings.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go back and forth, back and forth. And then WWE wins. And then they're not back and forth anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now WWE, WWF is winning
yeah,
steadily.
Win, yeah.
Until they pull out this match and they fuck up a lot of things coming out of it. First off, they fuck up the Hogan, you know, Goldberg giving it away on free TV. Then you fuck up, like I say, then you fuck
that
up
was a go-home show.
Yeah, it was a go-home show. That's
but the thing
good.
Was...
So they, and to a pay-per-view that did very well, because I think that was...
Oh, that was the go-home show of the Malone and...
And Rodman versus...
Yeah,
Malone.
But the thing with that, though, is... But that is... Again, we talk about moments. Is it that Goldberg... Yeah, that's a moment you got to see, though. Goldberg winning in the Georgia Dome and the crowd right there. You need to see
You have
that.
To see how big a star
because
he
I
was.
Don't think the finger poke of doom means as much if you haven't seen that.
That's
you know,
probably true.
So.
Because, and again, you have to know how big a star Goldberg was.
Yes.
Goldberg was the
yeah.
biggest thing they had.
And that Georgia
He was
Dome.
Their chance. If they had a chance to come back and take over again
mm-hmm.
from the... But it's like, imagine if they had taken Austin and put the belt on him and then changed it to, you know, to Foley a little while later or something like that and never gave it back to Austin. Like that, if they had done that, where would the WWF be?
It's the same old story,
same idea.
Same old song and dance with WCW is that Goldberg was really the new Sting.
Yeah.
Sting burned, not even the Crow Sting, I'm talking Surfer Sting, mm-hmm. and with against Flair, burned really, really hot, and then fizzled out. And that's what Goldberg did. He burned hot, and then they fucked him up.
They fucked him up.
And no knock on Goldberg, not his fault. It was a fuck up of them.
Okay, so my next one I have on here is in 2000. That's the
yeah,
Human Torch match.
Okay, Human Torch, you said. Yes, yes.
Yes, and the reason why I have it on there is because, again, if you're going to talk about what put WCW out of business and a person who had a big influence on the industry but is a complete idiot, I don't think you can completely ignore Russo.
What pay-per-view was that on?
Starrcade, I believe. Starrcade 2000. I
think. No, it wasn't Starrcade.
No?
Are
you sure?
Yes. I'm almost positive that this show... Was I want to say I don't. It's not Spring Stampede. Whatever come after Spring Stampede, because I honestly think this show happened on my birthday.
I think you're right. I thought that was New Blood Rising or whatever that happened on your birthday.
No, that happened the day I did something else because that was August.
Okay.
The May 7th, I'm pretty sure was. The...
It may have been your birthday. Oh, you're right. Either way, you
I'm
may
pretty
have
sure.
Been...
I was like super hungover and I like ordered the show because I didn't want to like.
Yeah, and you ended up with this shit. And all the matches were shit, and it was a horrible night. But this is the match that... Why does Vince Russo suck? Why did WCW go out of business?
Yeah.
Why is Vince Russo significant? This is the match to me that... Because if you watch this, you'll know why TNA sucked for so long, because they had Russo.
Yeah.
If you watch this, you'll know why WCW went out of business. If you watch this, you'll know why it was Vince McMahon was able to turn his creativity, though, into something good. Like, you can watch this and it kind of encapsulates
a lot of Russo to me.
And I don't think... And so that's why I have that
okay.
in there. Because it is shit. But basically what it is it's a Sting versus Vampiro. And it's the first guy to light each other on fire. But unlike the Inferno matches, which were kind of cool in WWF because of their spectacle, even though they were slow plotting, it was kind of a cool spectacle.
They only did, like, two, though.
Two.
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody would somebody would hit the mat and
the flames
would
go
up.
Yeah.
No, it's a spectacle.
Yeah.
This was two guys, and you had to, like, throw gasoline on each other and light each other on fire with, like, a torch.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is they eventually brawl to the top of the stage.
They're Titantron.
And you see, they're Titantron. You can see Sting change, I think it was Vampiro.
Vampiro hit Sting.
Yeah.
And Sting, like, fell to the ground, and then, like, a new guy didn't really look like Sting, like, popped up.
Yeah.
And then, yeah,
and you could tell it, and you could see it all happening, that it was a different guy.
Well, then they let the guy fire, and it was like a stuntman who ran off the top of the cage, went smack down into an obvious crash pad.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I mean, crash fucking pad.
Yeah.
Of course, but
so
the
obvious,
thing with crash pads is that if you hit them from the side, you can't tell.
No.
If you hit them straight down like they did, you can obviously tell.
Yeah.
It happened with Foley in that Hell in a Cell against Hunter. But the thing is, that's what they did, and of course, as soon as he hit the, immediately he was out of fire. Like the oxygen just hit it, so it wasn't like this guy. Like, it was just,
it's awful.
You remember the Foley Edge deal where he went off the table, the flaming. He went through the flaming table and hit, and then immediately went out. That still looked cool.
Yeah, well,
right?
That's because you saw them running towards him, spraying him down. You know, even
but
though
he was out of fire,
already,
but
he was
they
up, but
took
they still
the oxygen.
Yeah.
Yes, yes,
yeah, yeah.
This, they did
stuff.
That too. They sprayed this Sting guy down.
This is bad sports entertainment, which is Vince Russo.
But this ended, like, this was the thing where, I'm pretty sure this was a show where Canyon went off, like, this is two things. Canyon went off.
I think you're right, the triple.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I think that was the next show.
It was Crash Pad. Either, well,
that
was
a crash, yeah, but there was a Crash Pad, because that, yeah, that was
everything
the next,
was a gimmick match, though, and, like, no, and it no. might have been, it might have been where,
you're talking about Russo sucks. Canyon flew off the top of that cage, thanks to Mike Awesome, through a crash pad.
Yeah.
And that was the next pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Vince Russo was booking that pay-per-view. That pay-per-view happened in June of 2000?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That pay-per-view happened in Kansas City.
Oh, yeah.
That was in the Kemper Arena, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Jesus Christ.
Well, again,
A year later, are you fucking me?
Yeah.
The same goddamn writer, the same goddamn... Guess what I'm going to have to do? Dive off the top of the cage. What could go wrong?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Vince Russo, everybody.
Oh, my God.
The Demon Force match is on there.
That's a good one. That's it's an off-the-beaten-path kind of good one. Next one.
2001. WrestleMania 17. Watch the whole fucking thing.
Yeah, okay. and the only thing I would add to that is watch the go-home show as well.
Okay.
And you know why?
Why?
Simulcast.
That's true.
You need to see the simulcast.
You do need to
see
the simulcast. But this is it. This is the culmination. We talk about the culmination, the peak of WCW kind of being the
Starcade,
Sting versus
97.
Yeah, This is it for the Attitude Era, kind of that momentum. Now, they didn't go down to the same level, and they didn't have the competition.
Well, eventually, they did.
Well, yeah, actually, they're the same level now.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. But that was their peak.
That was the peak. That was the best the company's ever had. WrestleMania 17 is probably the best pay-per-view WWF ever put on top to bottom. Certainly. I mean,
well, you know what drew all the buys, right?
What?
Gimmick Battle Royal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But it's just, it is, it's got everything. It's such a great show.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many moments. You'll watch that. You'll see the first, it is the first TLC match, even though it is an official TLC match.
That's right, yeah.
You'll see great chain wrestling of Angle versus Benoit. You'll see the incredible
Jericho
heat.
And Regal.
Yeah, Jericho and Regal.
To open it.
Yeah.
No.
Just the great heat of course, Austin versus The Rock.
Was Pete Rose in that one? He was dressed up like the San Diego Chicken, wasn't he?
I think so, yeah. I think so. It's just, it's the best. Just watch that whole thing. Watch WWF's peak, and that's WrestleMania 17.
That's true. If we're talking about events, the other event you got to watch top to bottom is In Your House Canadian Stampede.
Yeah, if you're talking about great events.
Yeah.
Yeah. The reason it doesn't win because it isn't a WrestleMania, and it isn't, it's only a couple hours.
Which WrestleMania?
Only 2 hours. But it's as far as a great pay-per-view, it's a great fucking pay-per-view.
Yeah.
All right, what else you got there? 2004, so you're ahead of me. I only got one left.
Okay.
And then we got my three spares.
Okay. 2004, three-way main event of WrestleMania 20.
Mm-hmm.
Hunter, Benoit, and Michaels. I think you have to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I mean, again,
you have so, when you look at the moments there, you've got a great match, you've got a great win, and you've got a great moment to end the show.
You know, I don't have that on here, and I'll tell you the only reason I thought of it, because that's probably the, again, third best WrestleMania match, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I put these things ahead of Angles and Michaels. I mean, that's a great WrestleMania match.
Yeah.
But I put this ahead of, I put that match ahead of Undertaker versus HBK. Like, and those are great matches. This is also a great match up there with the Owen and the Owen and Brett. And what was the other one? Brett and Austin.
Okay,
but
yeah,
this,
yeah.
Is, this is that same level. This is a 5-star match.
Yeah.
Incredible match. I don't have, I didn't put it on there because I personally can't watch it. Like,
yeah.
It's just too tough for me to watch with Benoit and Eddie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there's the moment at the end. Obviously, it's the moment where they're hugging, the crowd's going crazy, and they're confetti.
Tremendous, man.
Well, that's the thing. It was the last great feel-good moment wrestling's ever given me.
Yeah.
And probably will be the last great feel-good moment wrestling will ever give me.
Owen Hart will go into the Hall of Fame.
That'll be close.
Yeah.
Actually, Brett coming back. There's been some other ones.
Yeah.
There has been some other ones. Yeah, that first night with Brett. But it's such a great moment. But the thing is, I would say people to watch it because it's significant and because it's a great match. I just didn't put it on there because I personally can't watch it.
All right,
but,
I know what you
but
mean.
But somebody else isn't going to have that same stigma.
you're
the same thing. You watched Eddie and you watched Chris Benoit from the beginning. Somebody who's only been watching wrestling for 3 to 5 years and wants to know this guy and doesn't understand what it is,
yeah.
They can watch
that.
I agree.
And that's this encapsulates to me what Chris Benoit was in the ring.
Yeah.
And that's, and again, that's what you, you know, from a wrestling perspective, I guess that's what you need to know.
Okay. And is that, you got another one there, or?
No, that's it.
That's it?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, that's, it, you know,
well,
that's,
I mean, that's
perfect, that's
spares,
a perfect.
Because
here's, I got my last one.
Okay.
I got my last one, and it happens in 2005. You said 2004, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my last one, and this it plays in perfectly. Watch the Raw Eddie Guerrero tribute show. After he passes away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, let's leave on a happy note.
But it's significant. It because of that, it you get the steroid policy, though it's not as stringent.
No, Benoit dying is what gets the steroid going, but Eddie dying.
Well, you had the steroid policy, but this created the steroid policy in place, but it isn't stringent yet. It's kind of a joke.
That's right. Eddie dying creates the policy. Benoit dying enforces the policy.
Exactly.
To a degree, anyway. But, yeah.
But you can watch this. You will, number one, you'll get Eddie Guerrero's passing is still such a loss. You know, he was very special as a performer.
You know what the thing was? It was, the thing about that show is that's the first chant, like just out of nowhere. And it was literally out of nowhere, the Thank You Eddie chant.
Mm-hmm.
After the video,
mm-hmm.
the Johnny Cash Hurt.
The Johnny
video,
Cash Hurt video.
Video.
That is so heart-wrenching.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's the thing, you're watching, and that's heart-wrenching, and all of a sudden you get, Thank You, Eddie, and it was like, and then all of a sudden it's like, they're zooming on the Big Show, and you're, Thank You, Eddie, and you just see the tears, like, burst out of Big Show.
Yeah.
And it's like, then you start, I'm starting to tear up about talking about it right now.
Yeah, and,
but
and you'll
like,
get the different things, and the other thing you'll get in this is you'll see the Chris Benoit try and talk about Eddie, and when you see this,
oh,
you kind of get an idea of what happened later, why
yeah.
it may have happened. And it all ties in together. And,
yeah.
And so because of this, I don't think if Eddie dies, I don't think what happens with Benoit later happens, personally.
I honestly, I had as one of my spares is I had the tribute shows. Because you had the Owen Hart tribute,
mm-hmm.
you had the Benoit tribute, and you had the Eddie Guerrero tribute. And I think all three of those need to be seen in some form
mm-hmm.
to get, again, you want to understand the business. I mean, again, we're just doing a, you're never going to understand the business with the whatever we're going to have now. We said 26, but it's probably going to be like 80 fucking moments. You know, yeah. Even that alone isn't going to have you, quote unquote, understand the
so
business.
You gave your two, you gave, again, give me your three spares. You've given two of them now, but give them again. So it's the tribute shows. What was the other one? You
tribute
said
shows, I said.
Shane Douglas.
Yeah, Shane Douglas, and
throwing
then my
down
last
the,
one.
Throwing down the NWA belt and declaring ECW.
Mick Foley getting thrown off Hell in a Cell.
It's a huge moment. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I toyed between that and the first Hell in the Cell. I really did. But I thought, good God Almighty, they killed him. And just,
God on my witness, the story is
they have broken his half. I mean, it just, yeah, that was just like, holy fuck, you know?
Well, it's still holy fuck. That's the thing. Again, I talked about RVD, and how you won't see that anymore. You won't see this. You will never see
that. Oh, God, no.
Thank God you'll never see something like that.
I think you will, though, eventually. I do. I think your business will evolve back that way.
I don't think they'll ever let somebody take that chance again.
They will.
They will do it. Don't get me wrong. They'll have spectacular stunts.
They take that chance, but then,
But they will be safer. Like, even
that would be stunning.
But even the Human Torch match, for instance, is a stunt, but it's incredibly safe. And that's where the business has evolved to. I mean, we talk about the, I mean, I guess the Canyon thing was fairly safe. I mean, it could have fucked up, but it's fairly safe. But again, this is it. They've gotten smarter. They won't just let somebody.
The Human Torch thing. That's something that
nobody knew Mick Foley was doing this.
Yes.
Except for Undertaker.
The thing is with that, and
Terry Funk.
The thing with Terry Funk didn't even know that. No, Terry Funk didn't know. No, the thing with it was with the stunt thing with Sting and that Human Torch thing. He's going off the thing and falling into crash pad, and he's a stunt double. That is something that a stunt guy does on a movie set every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yep.
He's a stunt guy. That's what he does. Chris Canyon is not a stunt guy. Owen Hart is not a stunt guy.
No.
Chris Canyon did the whole thing. From back, it seemed like it was going to be really safe. Well, fucking Owen Hart's thing seemed really safe, too. They're not fucking trained for this shit.
That's true.
Guy that was the pseudo-Sting was completely trained for it. When you say it was safe and said, that's what he does. And they say, please, kids, don't try this at home or at school. Fucking.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if Canyon falls short.
Yeah.
I'm sure he practiced several times. So if Canyon falls short, it's a bad night. To say the least.
I'm not sure he did practice. Fucking Owen Hart didn't practice.
No, that's different.
I mean, no, it's not really.
Yeah.
Not at all, even.
Owen Hart did practice.
No, he didn't.
Vince went down to show him who was safe.
No, that was, no, he didn't. No, that was the Vince and his...
Oh, that was Vince, and you're right, the zip line.
The zip line with Shawn Michaels.
With Shawn Michaels.
Right? Fucking he did a zip line.
I don't think you'll ever see anything that type of stunt again. I just don't think they can. I think they're so much more aware of bad press that they won't ever take the chance. But
I think you overestimate their ego.
Yeah, that's
really know what true. I mean.
So here's my three: Eddie Guerrero versus Rey Mysterio at Havoc 96.
Okay, great match. Again,
5-star match. It shows the greatness of Eddie. It shows the greatness of Rey. But the other thing about it shows
the greatness of WCW's undercard.
That's it. Yeah. It shows what the cruiserweight division was.
Yes.
It shows what the X division should be now, but isn't.
Yes.
How it's become a spot fest. It shows a cruiserweight X division type match with psychology.
Yes.
It to me encapsulates.
He wasn't in the match.
Psychosis.
Psychology.
It to me encapsulates the best. It's to me the if you're ever going to watch one WCW cruiserweight match, and there's a lot of great ones.
Yeah.
But one WCW cruiserweight match, that's it. That's the one you watched to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
My other one, ROH versus a CCW six-man match from ROH 100.
Okay. Yeah.
Because, again, I don't think you can, if you're going to talk about wrestling over the last 25 years, I don't want to ignore ROH. ROH was significant. Because you look at guys, Daniel Bryan, you look at Austin Aries, you look at AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, CM Punk.
Spanky, Paul London. I mean, they all
Dean Ambrose now.
Did Ambrose go through there? I don't know he did.
Maybe he just went through
I don't think he did. I don't
But maybe it's just through Dragon Gate. I'm not sure, 100% sure.
I don't think he did ROH Ambrose.
But Seth Rollins, right? Tyler Black.
John Moxley, I think. Yeah. So,
but the point is that...
Yeah, Seth Rollins,
It's probably where the best talent that we've seen ascend to the major two has come from.
It's the ECW
of its era.
Exactly. Oh, it definitely is. Number three, it's the best feeder of its era.
While we're talking about it not being good now, it was great then.
Well, the thing was, is you...
This is the culmination of its greatness. Feud, this is the best booked invasion feud in North American history.
Yeah.
Gabe Sapolsky won, like, Booker
of
the Year.
No, it's not the best. I disagree. It's not the best invasion feud in wrestling history.
I said North American
North
history.
American history? No, it's not.
Okay.
Memphis. Jerry Jarrett booking the outlaw promotion, the Poffo outlaw promotion.
This is better.
No,
this is better.
It was not.
Actually, this
It was not better. When Randy Savage shows up in the middle of the ring saying, I will take anybody. And like, just being this outlaw renegade. No, it was not.
This is booked better. But here's we'll disagree on that. But we'll agree to disagree on this. But the point being, I guess this isn't even so much an invasion angle as an interpromotional feud. Whereas that was an invasion angle. So they're a little bit different. But this is an interpromotional feud. But
this
the point is...
Kind of... Well, yeah, okay.
It's more of an interpromotional... But supposedly won like a book of the year like 4 years in a row.
Yeah.
So this gives you... This match is like a 4.5-star match. And it gives you an idea. Knowing ROH's peak and they've never reached... And Sapolsky wasn't there that much longer. It was like 2 more years and then gone.
Yeah.
This is his peak creatively.
Yeah.
This is their peak in ring. This is their peak of popularity. This is the...
If you want to know what the fuss about ROH is, watch this.
Watch this.
Yeah.
You can watch all of ROH 100, but definitely watch that main event. ROH 6-man tag team match from... and my other one is the Ultimate X match from TNA No Surrender 2006 between LAX and Daniels and AJ.
When Daniels jumps to the
middle.
That was tremendous.
What an unbelievable finish.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I have it in there for a couple reasons. It shows the Ultimate X match, which is the most innovative, best match that that WWE hasn't stolen. That's, you know, outside of WWE that we've probably...
Well, they never will.
And they never will, yeah.
They never stole the scaffold match, right?
I bet it wasn't that good.
That's true, but
this
it was...
This is different. This is good.
It can be good. Yeah. It can't be good with... Ryback can't do it.
No.
Can't, you know what I mean?
No,
like,
I know.
John Cena can't, you know, so... And they don't have the guys to do it. I mean, they do have the guys, but they don't feature them in that way kind of thing, so...
It's getting closer.
But
the point
being... I don't think they ever will.
Probably not. I mean, it would never be the exact same.
No.
But anyways, this is the best match that has ever... Most innovative match in the last several years.
Yeah.
It features the best tag team feud probably in the last 10 years. LAX versus Daniel Styles. I can't think of a better tag team feud over the last 10 years. It's great action. It showcases...
Less involves beer money, right?
No.
The Motor City Machine Guns?
It's a great... It's a good feud. Terrific. But not as good as this. This is better. And...
What about Triple X against America's Most Wanted?
That was fucking good, too.
With the Elix Skipper walk on the cage thing?
That was amazing. But I still go with this. I mean, I think for both heat and quality of the ring, and you had Conan as doing the speaking, you had the great in-ring.
Oh, that LAX was tremendous. Yeah. That actually is one of the... That could be the best act that TNA has ever had.
It's definitely up there. And, I mean, Daniels and AJ were so great as a team.
Yeah.
It didn't last long enough. And that's the thing. So I give this. I mean, they also had an unbelievable match at... Bound for Glory, that was a cage match.
Mm-hmm.
But I go with this one. I think you need to see this to understand what it was about TNA that this is right before, this is like a little bit before Russo shows up in 2006, I think. I think this is right before.
It was. I think it was right before. I think it was literally like days before.
This was. This is like right before he shows. And this is why at that time,
they
had buzz about them, positive buzz.
They did.
And why people were optimistic about the company. This kind of, to me, showcases what TNA could have been instead of what they've become. So I think that this is significant.
Well,
plus, it's great. It's just it's a great feud and a great match.
They had all of that momentum. And then the thing was,
you had the triple threat match too, right? The final resolution, I think it is, between Daniels, Joe, and Styles. And this is after that, though. That was 2005.
There was this one pay-per-view that I thought, I think it was Final Resolution, that I thought, if you're going to watch an event, I remember watching and seeing, it was Abyss against Sabu in a barbed wire match.
Yes.
Fucking bloody shit.
Yeah.
You had AJ, Daniels, and Joe.
Yeah.
Then you had a match called the Base Brawl, which had Dale Torborg and, like, somebody. But Bobby the Brain Heenan did commentary with Mike Tenay for that match.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck that, just made it.
Yeah.
And then I think it was, like, Alpha Male Monty Brown against Christian Cage. You know, like, you had everything going. And then, of course, you had your stupid Jeff Jarrett match. on top. But
everything else, Final Resolution closed with the three-way, I think.
It did. That was the one time that the X Division ever
closed. It was a five-star match.
That's
the easy one to go with, and I mean, it's not that you shouldn't watch.
Well,
that,
but that's the thing. Easy one. That's fine. That makes it easy. I'm great with that.
I go with the Ultimate X from 2006, No Surrender, simply because of some of the other factors that it's right before their ending of their right before Russo shows up, and it's a tag team feud, which is so rare now.
Again, it's so hard to come up with. Again, we talk about 25. I mean,
And it's hard to come up with a ton of moments you should see from TNA after 10 years. That's also significant to me.
Yeah, that's true, too.
And seriously, I mean, and most of them are from 2006, 2005.
I just look like we didn't even talk about...
Yeah, you should see that. You're like, Skipper, walk the fucking top of that cage.
Yeah.
Like it's a fucking highway. We talk about you won't see that anymore.
Yeah.
And that's probably more dangerous than what Foley did. Like, that had potential to fucking go wrong.
Oh, sure, but I mean,
it's spectacular.
Yeah, it was. And it just... But I also look at... Like, we didn't talk about Hogan and Warrior.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
And to me, that's more significant. But that's a significant moment.
Well, it's significant that Warrior gets it, but it's also significant that he doesn't work out.
Well, it's also significant that the match was great.
Yeah. Yep.
You know what I mean? Like,
Hogan Rock. Hogan Rock almost made my list.
Yeah. Well, there's that, too.
You
right?
know, WrestleMania 18, Hogan Rock. So, you can't ever do this in a bit. But, hey, go watch these moments if you're new to wrestling, you've been wondering. That's it. I think that's our history lesson.
I hope that answers your question.
2012 and beyond. If that doesn't answer your question, you can go fuck yourself.
Which WrestleMania is this?
R-O-U-T.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, that's going to do it, then.
Step out, go take a Russo.
Uh-oh. Fire Russo. All right, well, we're just going to end here then. So I hope that answers your question. I hope you enjoyed. We looked at 2012, the year that was, and, of course, some of our great moments that from a bygone era, as it were. But, no, thanks so much for sticking around. We're at We Talk Wrestling on Twitter. Email us at @wetalkwrestling.com. Go to wetalkwrestling.com, and that's where all of our shows and blogs and such are. Stuff's archived, but we're also on iTunes and Stitcher as well, so hope you'll check out all the old shows if you haven't already. So in the meantime, and in between time, that's it. Another edition of We Talk Wrestling. Good night, folks.